People from working class backgrounds are even less likely than other men to present with potential health problems. We may have a look at the whys and the wherefores of that. I'm tempted to start with pensioners. I have a feeling that until that budget is finally unveiled on Wednesday, and has there ever been more of a hokey-cokey flavoured precursor to a budget than this one, that we will be looking at various iterations of the question, who should bear the brunt? We all accept there are holes that need to be filled, there are problems that need to be fixed, and there are bills that need to be met. But who should be paying them? Today, we look at pensioners and possibly people with expensive homes.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, the business secretaries apologise for the intense speculation ahead of the Chancellor's upcoming budget. Peter Kyle has said sorry, but has argued it's an important moment for the country. There's been multiple reports over what Rachel Reeves could announce on Wednesday, including changes to income tax. Chairman of the Nighttime Industry Association, Sasha Lord, told LBC yesterday that he's holding his breath.
The hospitality industry is the fifth biggest sector in the whole of the UK, with the third largest employer, and we are one of the most taxed sectors. And to put this into perspective, the average pint in Greater Manchester is about £6.50. In London, I think it's about £7.50. Once you've paid your alcohol duty, you've paid your VAT, you've paid for your member staff, your utility bills, the actual products, the beer itself, the profit left on a pint now is 10p.
A leading business group will urge the Chancellor later to spare business from further tax rises on Wednesday. The head of the CBI will use a speech to urge Rachel Reeves to tackle growth obstacles instead. The White House says talks with Ukraine have made meaningful progress in efforts to end the war with Russia. US and Ukrainian officials say they've identified clear next steps following discussions over the weekend. The joint statement lacks detail, but says any peace deal must uphold Ukraine's sovereignty. Talks are continuing. Charities have praised David Cameron for going public with his prostate cancer diagnosis. The former Prime Minister has revealed he was successfully treated for the disease earlier this year. Lord Cameron says he now wants to add weight to calls for screening to be offered to men at high risk. Oncologist Professor Pat Price has told LBC she hopes it encourages more men to come forward.
Men, not very good. Come on, chaps, you can do it. You can think about your health. If the screening comes out at high risk, need it, trust them. Trust the science. They will do that if it saves lives. If it saves lives, go and get the test if suggested.
Senior officials at the BBC are due to give evidence to MPs regarding the recent row over editorial standards. The corporation's chairman will appear alongside board members at the Commons Culture Committee this afternoon. And Tottenham's boss Thomas Franks apologised to the club's fans after their 4-1 defeat to Arsenal in the North London derby. Arsenal are now 6 points clear at the top of the Premier League. In the City, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 25 at £95.65. The pound buys $1.30 and €1.13. LBC weather cloudy with sunny spells for most. Some outbreaks of rain for the northeast of England and a milder day, a high of 11 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
The EasyJet Black Friday sale is now on. Get up to 10% off flights. Long weekend in Florence, anyone? Or maybe a ski trip to Switzerland. Plus extra offers throughout the week. Book now at easyjet.com. Get out there. Selected dates, sale ends 11pm the 2nd of December. T's and C's apply.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
It is 3 minutes after 10. A very good morning indeed to you. And interesting times, isn't it? A budget on Wednesday. I don't know why. I am not self-referential or self-obsessed enough to do an entire phone-in on why I am much more interested in this budget than any budget I've ever been more interested in before. But you know what I do when I claim, somewhat tongue-in-cheek, that I'm not self-obsessed enough to do a certain inquiry at 10 o'clock in the morning. I pretend I'm interested in what you think. So what I could do is say, is it just me, or are you more interested in this budget coming up on Wednesday than you've ever been in any budget before? And then you ring me and we try and work out why we are both more interested in the budget that's coming up on Wednesday, without me actually letting it slip that I'm actually much more fascinated by why on earth, after two decades of doing this job, and always knowing that if the Tories are in power, which they have been for almost all of those two decades, then I will come out of the budget better off than I went into it. But when Labour are in power, as a sort of high-earning, expensive homeowner, then I will hopefully come out a little bit worse off. And how weird does that make me? That word hopefully in that sentence, because what appears to be the order of the day this week is that we are supposed to be forming an orderly queue to say that it shouldn't be us. A nice orderly queue. I mean, today you've got the CBI saying, not us, Chancellor, not us. You heard in the news bulletin there, the hospitality industry saying, not us. And these are all valid points, by the way. I'm not for a minute poo-pooing them or suggesting that they should do a Gavin Williamson, which means they should go away and shut up. I am pointing out that everybody is putting their hands up and saying, not me, Gov. I can't wear this. It's outrageous. Not me. Could make a little list, couldn't we? Who's already on that list? High earners? Taxpayers? Almost all. Well, no. High earners, whether you like it or not. If you're in a certain category, then you count as a high earner, even if you feel you're struggling to make ends meet. Industry? Hospitality, which has its own little subset of industry? Expensive homeowners, the mansion tax that looks like it is going to happen. I've got more details on that for you shortly. I mean, everybody, really. No, nobody. There is a group called the something, is it the Millionaires for Higher Tax or something like that? I like the look of them. Patriotic millionaires, using, which is very rare in the current discourse, an accurate and helpful definition of patriotism, which means wanting what is best for your fellow citizens, your fellow subjects in our case. So it should be an act of patriotism to pay your tax proudly, if not always happily. Some of these foreign-born billionaires who are quitting the country because of our tax regimes, I would argue, are not displaying a great degree of patriotism for the countries that have welcomed them and allowed them to build lives here. But, of course, you're not allowed to question the wisdom of immigration policy when it applies to billionaires, such as the direction of traffic when public discourse is defined by right-wing media owned by billionaires. So some poor soul working as a nurse or a delivery driver stoned them! But somebody heading to Dubai because they don't want to pay their fair share into the country that has provided them with the life that they sought and quite often the workforce that they needed. Oh, that's outrageous. That's proof that Rachel Reeves is well dodged. All these people who are, I mean, if it's even true that they're leaving the country, it is to avoid paying their fair share of what is needed to put the economy back on an even keel. The economy that was, of course, kebabbed by precisely the administrations that the same media told you to vote for the best part of a decade and a half. Who else is on that list? Who else is sort of saying, look, does everybody acknowledge that something must be done? I love that phrase. Something must be done. It's the original fig leaf, isn't it? What? Don't ask me what. God forbid. Something must be done. What? Well, we need to save money or raise money. How much money could we save by making life on the welfare state even more parlous and perilous than it is already? Oh, don't be ridiculous. I know of someone who knows someone who told me about someone who once heard of someone who went to school with someone who married someone who then met someone in the library who lives a life of Riley on benefits. And that proves that they're all swinging the lead and that the country's economic woes could be solved overnight. Overnight. Simply by making it even harder to live on welfare in this country. The alternative, of course, is to raise more money. To raise more money. How do we do that? Well, we raise it through tax. There's no other way to do it. Sympathetic to wealth tax arguments, but they are a little simplistic. The mansion tax, as it will no doubt be known, is a form of wealth tax, and I am warm towards the idea, even though I will be on the hook for it. And income tax, nibbling at the edges, recalibrating without actually raising it. What they do is freeze the thresholds. So say that you start paying a higher tax rate at, let's just say for the sake of argument, £100,000. If that doesn't go up with at least inflation, then more people will move into that threshold, will move over that threshold every year as their wages go up, but the threshold at which you start paying a different tax rate does not. And that, of course, brings us to pensioners who also fall into this category. Not if they are living exclusively on the state pension, but if they have other income, either from capital and pension investments or indeed from work, then they move over this threshold if it freezes. And the House of Commons Library, according to the Daily Express this morning, has calculated how many pensioners may fall into that category. And it's not a huge number more than we have already, but it is, once again, to use the cliche of the day, it is the direction of traffic. So 8.7 million OAPs and a 10 pence prize to whoever can tell me how many old age pensioners there are in the country at the moment. But 8.7 million currently pay tax. That's about three quarters, which should make it easier to work out how many there are in total. And that is set to rise to 9.3 million. This, by the way, is the very, very first time that I have, or certainly very close to the first time in a million years, that I have turned to the Daily Express for a little bit of help in working my way through the day's news. But I like I don't like the headline. I was drawn to the headline that states pensioners to lose £800 a year in Reeves's budget. I was drawn to it for a number of reasons. The first is that that makes me think of the pensioner who is scraping by on the state pension. Currently, I think about 240 quid a week. And it's meant to, isn't it? You see that Daily Express front page, a newspaper that is almost exclusively read now by old age pensioners, like most newspapers, to be honest with you. You see that front page, and they are trying to frighten your nan by making people think that this is an £800 penalty with which every old age pensioner in the country is going to be hit. Of course, it's not. It is an estimated £800 a year that people lucky enough to be in receipt of a lot more than the state pension may be required to pay in tax as a consequence, not of tax rises, but of threshold freezes. Quite dry, but I think quite interesting. And the second reason why I was drawn to this headline is that we hardly ever do this. I think partly because I suffer from a sort of dewy-eyed sentimentality. I see the word pensioners in a headline, and I see people who should never, ever, ever receive anything but love and support from the state. It's a weird one, right? Because find me 100 pensioners, and the percentage of them who wouldn't cross the road to help you if you were on fire will be roughly the same as it would among 100 people in their 20s, their 30s or their 40s. In fact, when you look at some of the sort of polling on things like immigration and Brexit, pensioners seem to be rather less informed and forward-thinking as a cohort, speaking in percentage and proportionate terms. That's why they all read the Daily Express, or possibly it's chicken and egg. It's because they all read the Daily Express and the Daily Mail that they hate foreigners and think that young people have got it easy. But generally speaking, the idea that we should be endlessly and eternally sympathetic to old age pensioners is an odd one, but it's one that I suffer from. You say the word pensioner, you say the word fuel bills, energy costs. I think of people who were ringing me a few years ago to describe sitting on the sofa under a blanket because they couldn't afford to put the heating on. These are people who will, by definition, be scraping by on the state pension. About 12 million OAPs in the UK, roughly 20% of the overall population. And I've got another confession to make, actually. I do this quite regularly these days. I don't know why, I just think it's interesting. I've told you when we were talking about dog owners or about people with obesity or people with tattoos, that the really easy way to do this job is to find a target and then engage in a little bit of performative abuse. So you don't really mean it, you kind of mean it, but you exaggerate it because it gets the phones ringing and it makes you laugh and everybody has a bit of a giggle and we try not to think too much about people who might actually be hurt by it. So I'll give you an example. With people who I felt as a foolish young man, long before the therapist beckoned, people who I thought loved their animals too much. people who love their pets too much. And I used to do jokes about it. You do realise that if you died, you'd have about a day and a half before it started eating you on the sofa. And this is sort of brutal, slightly crass, but not unamusing little aperçu like that. And a few things, I mean, lots of reasons, isn't there, why you change your view? Aren't there why you change your view about things? But I always remember one email I got after a show like that. Lovely bloke just telling me that since his wife died, if it wasn't for his two Dachshunds, I remember the breed, if it wasn't for his two Dachshunds, then he doesn't think he'd have been able to get through the last 6 months. And at that point, I thought, I tell you what, Jimbo, probably never go there again, mate. Seriously, never take the mickey out of people for loving their pets too much. Never do that spiel that you love so much about, oh, you can tell someone who doesn't like humans because they love their pet. Because it's not true, pal. Is it? It's just not true. Same way that eat less and exercise more is not a helpful thing to say to somebody who is obese. They have without a scintilla of doubt heard it several million times before. Usually from slightly overweight, pompous radio presenters like you. So let's leave that as well. Let's not do the eat less, exercise more shtick anymore. Let's not do the, oh, crikey, your pets will eat you if you die on the sofa by tea time. Let's just not do that anymore. Tattoos, there's lots of things on the list. Pensioners. I've got a horrible feeling I used to make comments about people who smell of wee when I was talking about pensioners. And that is a really good example of what I'm talking about. So I would oscillate from this ludicrous sentimentality, which is let's treat them all like our own nan. I never had a nan, you know. I never met a nan, never met a grandma. I had a great aunt who was, I mean, very much fulfilled the role. She didn't have children of her own. My mum was an only child, so my Auntie Lily was like a grandma, but I never had a nan. So you kind of oscillate between this ludicrous sentimentality, dewy-eyed sentimentality, let's all give the pensioners everything they want and never ever criticise or question them, and this slightly schoolboy, puerile, performative obnoxiousness, where you sort of say, you know, why are we looking after them so much when, frankly, there are holes in the economy that need to be filled? Today, I would like you to land between those two stools. I don't know that we need to go into the slightly arid detail of the £800 a year that some pensioners will be required to find, for want of a better word, in the event of the tax thresholds freezing. And by the way, that won't kick in until 2029 and 2030. So it's a slightly nebulous front page of the Daily Express. But what I really want is to address something we never really addressed together. I think everyone else does. And I'm sure that being much more professional than me, none of them fall into the either of those traps. The sort of dewy-eyed sentimentality when objective conversation is left at the door, or the sort of performative obnoxiousness where you pretend that you're slaying a sacred cow or tackling some timeless shibboleth, and in fact, you're not. You're just trying to get the phones to ring. I'm not doing either of those things today. I'm just wondering whether, at this point in human, at this point in British history, being a bit less generous to pensioners who do not rely upon the old age pension, who do not rely exclusively on the state pension, is a good idea. And that's really what I want you to say. And everyone can come at this. Because, of course, young people, I've got a horrible feeling part of the reason why the coverage of young people who are in neither work, education, nor training is often so cruel and unsympathetic is a way of actually protecting older newspaper readers from the reality of their own situation. So you can say, how on earth could anybody suggest that I should be paying a little bit more tax when all the young people are living it up and skiving off and doing nothing? Talk about health issues or disabilities or the work life balance or the impossibility of getting on the bottom rung of the property ladder, even if you work 40 hours a week. Don't talk about any of that stuff. Just set two sections of the population up in opposition to each other and choose which one you're going to protect to the detriment of the other one. But this is a proper question, and I think it's a really important one. And it's not, for most people in this category, going to be a huge sum of money. But is this country currently, for very obvious political reasons, is it just too generous to old age pensioners who do not rely on the state pension, who do not rely exclusively on the state pension. I think they tilted at this windmill when they sought to introduce means testing for the winter fuel allowance, but they used far too blunt an instrument and they sold it very badly. But the simple question, and one that I can't believe we don't ask more on the programme, is we talk endlessly about people at the low end of the age scale not being in education, employment or training, but we never talk about old people who aren't in education, employment or training, and we never describe them as a drain on the state because we presume that they've paid into it all of their lives. But is it possible that actually we need to be a little bit less generous to old age pensioners who do not rely exclusively on the state pension? 0345 60 60 973. Any age, welcome. I want to know your perspective. I want to know the reasoning behind what you think. But remember, I sit here, not smugly, actually. I think I know when I'm being smug, most of the time. But I'm not being smug today. I sit here today as someone who sees his patriotic duty as involving paying a little bit more tax next year than I will do this year. I presume there are lots of old age pensioners who are the same. I just wonder how we decide morally or politically or personally whether society is currently a place that is too generous to old age pensioners not surviving exclusively on the state pension. And for the avoidance of doubt, I'm 99% certain that it is. 0345 6060 973.
LBC.
Things are really heating up in the country's smallest house.
Dad!
Squealed Mia Mouse.
We could save around £100 by setting the boiler flow temperature to 60 degrees.
And turning radiators down in rooms we don't use,
interrupted Mo.
Yes, Mo.
Turn them down,
not off,
said Mia.
Plus binding and blocking drafts,
said Mo.
Should save enough to increase our allowance.
A little saves a lot. You could save around £100 a year off your energy bills with 3 tips at gov.uk/cleanenergy.
You are not an egg. You should not be put in a box. But when it comes to retirement advice, that's how some people get treated. Put in a one-size-fits-all box. Not at Fisher Investments UK. We work with you to create a personalised retirement plan. Fisher Investments UK. Retirement advice that's as individual as you are. Learn more at fisherinvestments.co.uk. Investing involves the risk of loss. Fisher Investments UK is regulated by the UK Financial Conduct Authority.
At Laithwaite, we go to great lengths to bring you great wine. We go far and wide. Searching high, and we mean really high. And low. And we mean stored deep underground in a cave low. Off the shelf? We don't go there. Off the beaten track? We certainly go there. And the best bit is, we even come to you. Order now at laithwaites.co.uk. Laithwaites. We stop at nothing to bring you great wine.
This is LBC. Message James O'Brien on WhatsApp now on 0345 60 60 973.
22 minutes after 10 is the time. Would you like to, would you like a little insight into what passes for editorial consultation on this programme? So I just said to Keith, did I just call for means testing on the state pension without actually calling for means testing on the state pension? And Keith said, that's what it sounded like to me. And I said, yeah, I thought so. And then I paused for a minute and I went, yeah, but I didn't though, did I? Because I'm not calling for means testing on the state pension, and yet, at the same time, I sort of am, because what I'm saying is, if you are a pensioner and you are in receipt of this amount of money, then the Treasury should come for you on Wednesday, come for a tiny bit of what you get on Wednesday. And although it wouldn't actually be coming out of the bit of your pot that is state pension, it would still be coming out of the pot that your state pension goes into. Are you still with me at the back? Ray's in Whitstable, lovely part of the world. Ray, what would you like to say?
Hello,
James. Thank you, Ray.
Yeah, indeed. Because I always bring up Tom Swarbrick on this subject, because he's of the same opinion as me.
Which is? Obviously, I'm only pretending not to know. I tune in religiously every day.
Okay, we get to this Daily Express nonsense first of all. Is this £800 only refers to those pensioners who will be hitting the 40% tax bracket?
Yeah.
That's what it refers to. The normal pensioner in April of a state pension of £241 a week will be paying something like maybe £3 a year in tax a year. So that's what that should... That doesn't refer to normal pensioners. It only refers to quite well-off pensioners.
Yes. Well, I mean now, again, that's relative, isn't it? But they seem quite well-off to me.
Indeed. And my opinion is this. I'm with you. It should be means-tested.
Well, hang on a minute. I didn't say that. If it's going to be a protest outside LBC again, I want Swarbrick to be on the end of it, not me. I'm not saying it should be means tested. I'm just asking a slightly, perhaps more, lily-livered question, which is, are we too generous to pensioners who do not rely exclusively on the state pension for their income?
Yes, and I'm saying it should be means tested because,
That is Ray in Whitstable who wants to means test the pension. Ray in Whitstable. And not me. But he is going to be on the hook for that, even though, he is in favour of it.
Yes, indeed. And if you look at the facts, very soon there will be 500,000 pensioners who are in the 40% tax bracket. If you means test that, you get £6 billion a year. Now, to me, that's a no-brainer.
So by means test, you mean you take the state pension away from them?
Absolutely.
All of it?
That's a no-brainer. If you've got £1,000 a week coming in retirement, why the hell do you need a state pension for? Don't explain that to me.
Because, well, you know why. And, I mean, I don't want to preempt future callers, but I've been paying into it all my life.
No.
Oh, yes.
The people who work now pay your pension.
Yeah, I know, but I know that. But I've been paying into the system all my life.
It's a benefit. They write to you and you have to claim it. It's a benefit. For all we know, Andrew, whatever we call him now, Andrew Innocent, could well go and claim his state pension. And I wouldn't put it past him, neither.
I remember some people coming forward to say they didn't want their winter fuel allowance, but there was nothing they could do to avoid getting it.
But it is.
And you'd put... So it can't be voluntary. You need to say to someone who is on... So what is it a year? About £12,000 a year, the state pension?
The state pension, a minute, yeah, it's going to go up to £12,500.
So if I'm on 45 and you're taking 12 away from me, that feels a bit wrong. Have I got the sums wrong?
No, you have to be over 50.
50.
You have to be paying 40% tax before, including your pension. Why should you give you a state pension if your income is £50,000 a year before you get a pension?
Oh, I see what you mean. Yeah, no, fair enough. I mean, there's like all thresholds. If it's a guillotine rather than a taper, it's going to feel very, very unfair to people who are one penny short of the guillotine and very over generous.
That's the same with every benefit, though. But if you go bang yes at 40% and say, well, you're not getting it, you've got £1,000 a week in retirement. Why should we give you more money?
Well, that's the phone-in. That's the phone-in. Why should you get more money from the state if you are already comfortably... I mean, Michael, I suspect, is part of your campaign group. He says, yes, I should pay for... I'm a pensioner who was well paid when in work, but I've never been better off than I am now.
Exactly. That's how a lot of pensioners are. So why should you give them another £12,000 a year of taxpayers' money? Young people who are working now, who can't get a house, who are struggling to pay their bills. Should they give £12,000 to the rich people?
Yeah.
Look after the young people.
And so all we'd argue about then, if you have actually burst the balloon of paying into the system or paying into the pot, one I think is accurate, the second one obviously is not. All we'd really argue about then is how much is enough or how much is too much.
Indeed, is £100,000 a year enough? Should we still give you a pension when you're on £100,000 a year?
Because you get it.
In retirement?
Because you get it.
Well, why should we do that? Maybe we'll give it to people who used to run Thames Water. Maybe they deserve a pension as well.
Yeah. I mean, it's a bit of a hobby horse for you, this. I can see why.
Indeed. Because I'm a pensioner, and this is I'm always ringing up about the state pension.
Well, don't say that. It might make me less likely to take your next call, really. I like to feel special. We all like to feel special, Ray. I don't want anybody else's cast-offs. But that is what something you care about, because it seems self-evident to you. I can hear it in your voice. It's one of those really easy things to fix. But you know what you're doing, Ray. You're doing what I spent a lot of time doing in 2016. You're presuming that the facts will overcome the feelings among the British electorate. And, of course, it is not always like that. There'll be people listening to this, as whether they're in work or not, who've got a six-figure income and don't feel well off. I'm jolly well entitled. I work plumbing hard. I'm jolly well entitled to my 12. And that's why I'm not actually allying myself with Ray. I don't want to sound like a complete coward. I'm not going to stand here and say, I'm just asking questions, when everybody knows I'm not. But I am just asking questions. I do feel things are too generous. I think that means testing might be too blunt. But I certainly don't have a problem with what's currently being proposed, despite the best efforts of right-wing newspapers, read almost exclusively by old-age pensioners, to, as Ray has explained, both misrepresent the reality of the situation and completely forget the economic situation that the entire country finds itself in. Are we too generous to old age pensioners who are not relying exclusively on the state pension? Yes or no? 0345 6060 973. It's a whopping great yes from Ray. It's a slightly yes whopping yes from me. What is it from you? Dominic Ellis has your headlines.
The head of a leading business group has urged the Chancellor to deliver stability in her budget so firms can invest. The CBI's Ray Newton-Smith has urged Rachel Reeves to avoid inflicting a death by a thousand taxes on Wednesday. Russia says it's yet to receive any information from the Ukraine peace talks held in Geneva over the weekend. US officials say the discussions with Ukraine resulted in meaningful progress in efforts to end the war with Russia. And the former Prime Minister David Cameron has revealed he was successfully treated for prostate cancer. He's backed a targeted screening program for the UK's most common cancer in men. LBC weather, cloudy with sunny spells for most today. Some outbreaks of rain in the northeast of England. A milder day, a high of 11 degrees.
The budget on LBC.
Unemployment rising, growth flatlining, and a £20 billion black hole in public finances.
At the budget last year, I fixed the foundations. I put our public finances back on a firm footing and began rebuilding our economy.
How will Chancellor Rachel Reeves look at balancing the books?
They have given up trying to get the government to live within its means, and they have given up on not raising tax.
Join me, Sheila Fogarty, for the budget live and in full as the Chancellor sets out her tax and spending plans for the next year.
Then join me, Tom Swarbrick, live from Westminster for expert analysis to help break it all down. And, of course, we'll take your calls.
Is my car going to be more expensive to run?
Will my council tax go up?
So what does this mean for my mortgage then?
The budget, this Wednesday on LBC.
How's the business going?
We're busier than ever, but struggling to get the staff we need.
Oh, recruiting can be such a distraction. We gave Job Centre Plus a try, and they've really helped us out.
Really?
Yeah, it was dead easy. We got our own employer advisor, Julie, who helped advertise our jobs, shortlisted candidates for us, and let us interview at the Job Centre. We've hired some great people, and Job Centre Plus really took the hassle out of it. And there was no fee.
Brilliant. That's straight on my to-do list.
Find out more at business.gov.uk/recruit. Eligibility criteria apply.
If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, what you thought you were getting may not be what you ended up with. From unexpected site fee increases, running costs, a huge depreciation in value, many owners feel they've been missold. If you think this might be you, holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive the compensation you're entitled to. Text ASSIST to 78900 to find out more. That's ASSIST to 78900.
Hurry! Extra savings in Hillary's best ever Black Friday sale end soon. Until the 2nd of December, get an extra 10% off absolutely everything. That's on top of up to 50% off hundreds of made-to-measure blinds, curtains and shutters. Plus, control your blinds from anywhere with a half-price smart hub when you buy any electric blind. Don't forget, with Hillary's, measuring and fitting is always included. So get window wise and book your free in-home appointment today at hillarys.co.uk. Conditions apply.
They did it again. Flour instead of flowers on my birthday. And 95 minutes late. But it's hard to leave when you've shared so much. Your postcode, your gluten intolerance. Then I saw it. 25% off your first Ocado shop. Plus free delivery. And I just knew I'd found the online supermarket of my dreams. Ocado. Life delivered. Geographical restrictions. Min spend £60. Max saving £20. Charges and Christmas restrictions apply. New customers only. Terms at Ocado.com.
James O'Brien. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
Listen, you know me well enough now to be completely unsurprised by the confession that I'm not very well organised. I was about to say, if you could see this desk, but you can't see it. Can they see it, Keith? Should we get a drone? Let's get a drone. Let's fly a drone around the studio. That'll keep Keith happy for about 20 minutes. But I am a mess. I mean, in so many ways. But I am a very messy person. I'm not one of those people that believes that a tidy desk is a tidy mind. I think that creative people often thrive in chaos. That's even without learning about neurodiversity. But some of the stories I try to keep because I think they're going to come round again and again and again. I amazingly succeed in doing so. I've just pulled this one out of the folder. 3 in 4 people paying top rate tax don't feel rich. I think it's relevant to what Ryan Whitstable was saying when he casually but convincingly talked about rich pensioners not needing the state pension. But pensioners are no different from anybody else when it comes to the Mr. Micawber principle. The idea that if you live just within your means, you're happy. If you live just without your means, you're not. But I do feel that after years of kowtowing to pensioners, I use the word advisedly, for political reasons, we probably need a little bit of a cold shower when it comes to the protection of income for people who don't need that income, i.e., pensioners who are a long, 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 long way away from relying on the state pension to survive. Russ is in Bangor. Didn't we have a lovely day? Russ, what would you like to say?
Wrong one, mate. I'm in Northern Ireland, Bangor. That's the Welsh one.
Forgive me. Well, I mean, okay. Was that ever established?
I spend my life correcting things.
Was that ever established? Fiddler's Dram, I believe, as a
it
pub...
You're right on that. I don't know the answer to that question.
As a pub quiz contestant. Was it ever established beyond doubt that they were going to Bangor in Wales and not Bangor in Northern Ireland?
You could do a phone-in about it, couldn't you, on Thursday? Mystery hour.
Well, someone could ring in with it, but... at least we can all agree that we had a lovely time.
Well, you can have a lovely time coming to the city of Bangor now, of course, from Northern Ireland.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Carry on. Can you remember why you rang in?
I think so. I think I'm quite well placed to talk about this because I'm 60 next year.
Right.
I have a widow. My mum's a widow, and she's 90, and I have kids in their 20s. The wealthiest person out of my kids and my mum is my mum.
By a factor.
Well, actually, I just got the ONS numbers up, actually, because I don't want to spoil this conversation with some facts.
Full of facts, you cheeky monkey.
No, I don't mean you. I mean you're going to get all your WhatsApps from people saying that you're anti-old people and all that rubbish.
God,
the wealthiest, the ONS, the Office for National Statistics, say,
yes.
Easy for me to say, the wealthiest age groups are typically those whose household head is age 55 and over, peaking in the 65 to 74 age group.
Really?
It says...
Well, they're the best-off people in the country.
The best-off people in the country are the pensioners. Wealth accumulation increases with age. Median household wealth gradually increases with age. I'm reading this from the ONS now as we speak.
Yeah, good.
From around 15,200 for household age 16 to 24 years, peaking at approximately 502,500 for households with a head age 65 to 74.
Yeah.
So I think you know the answer to my question, your question.
Well,
of course there need to be means tested.
How are we going to do it? Because in a way, a tax threshold is a means test, isn't it? Slightly softer way of doing it, and the Daily Express will be up in arms, but I mean...
And the Daily Mail, because all their readers...
And the Daily Telegraph.
Are the pensioners.
Yeah.
Yeah,
but the rest of us is probably the best example of that stranglehold that a certain type of newspaper has on public discourse that we've come up with, even though it's not the most immediately obvious. If you are pandering to the prejudices and the interests of your readers, you're going to pollute public discourse in a way that leaves everybody else, i.e. everyone who's not a relatively wealthy old-age pensioner, excluded entirely from the conversation.
Well, I just went into Costa to get a coffee, and all the old people in there were sat reading the Daily Mail, without exception.
Come on, there must have been one exception. Wasn't anyone reading the Beano?
No, honestly, anybody reading a paper in there who was a pensioner was reading the Daily Mail.
Did you get a free mail with your latte?
No, it wasn't any of that. To be honest, I think it's habitual, isn't it? They've read it for all their lives and they can't possibly give it up now, even though it just spouts lots of rubbish every day.
And they're buying the Daily Telegraph. That's not even a joke.
Well, that's for the rich ones. The rich ones.
Slightly richer. They're going to be owned by the same...
richer ones. Let's put that into context. The slightly rich ones. So, now, in answer to your question, it would have to be a wealth tax. It couldn't be an income tax. It would have to be based on how much you have in property, in pensions, and all that kind of stuff. But nobody's willing to grasp that nettle, are they?
Well, apparently not. I mean, Wednesday, we await. Apparently, Tom Sorbitt grasps it on an almost daily basis, so kudos to him. But, of course, politically, it is highly charged because the cohort that Russ is talking about is, they've corrected the thing on the screen now. He was in Northern Ireland, not Wales. I made the mistake, not you. And I love the way you've corrected it as if it was you that made the mistake, but it was me that made the mistake. He was in Bangor in Northern Ireland, not Bangor in Wales. which is the subject of a famous song by Fiddler's Dram, which came out roughly calculating it by how old I was at the time. Just a little mental image of myself. Good Lord, I'm wearing short trousers. It must have been 1982 or thereabouts. Didn't we have a lovely time the day we went to Bangor? I'm going to get the word slightly wrong. A lovely day. We had lunch on the way and all for under a pound, you know. Don't look at me like that. I'm in full control of my faculties. Steve's in Clayton West. Where's that, Steve?
It's West Yorkshire. It's a district of Huddersfield.
Thank you very much. What made you pick up the phone?
Anger at the thought of A, being means tested, and B, some sort of guillotine point that sees me worse off. And everybody sort of hurrahing for that as a principle.
I suppose if I were a populist politician, I'd say, oh, no, we don't mean you. You'll be all right.
Exactly.
We just mean the ones over there who are richer than thou.
Exactly that. And as I said to your colleague, yes, taxing billionaires, who would be against that?
Well, there's a big gap between... Well, I presume there is. I don't want to speak out of turn, but I presume the gap between you and billionaires is pretty huge, and there's probably some people in it who should be chipping in a little bit more.
Exactly that. James, I've got a mortgage until I'm 71.
Yeah.
72, sorry, it keeps going up. Through a series of bad life choices,
okay.
I've just retired from being a paramedic at age 66, because yes. We don't get to go early like the police and fire do.
Yeah.
I've worked since I was 16. As you've rightly said, it's a system. The people who are working now are paying for me, but I've done that for everybody throughout my working life. I think it would be extremely unfair to have my estate pension removed just because I have paid into public service initially. Sorry, public service. Local government initially, and then the NHS pension schemes.
Can I ask how much more than the state pension you're expecting to get every year, or would that be rude?
It'd be rude. I've finished my working life owing the tax person. $4,500. So I'm in a minus tax position at the moment, if you like. I owe them.
Yeah, but I can't get stuck into your personal situation, which is the platform from which you've rung, without knowing how much more than the state pension you're going to be receiving every year.
Right, I am just into the 40% bracket.
So you'd only pay 40% on that little bit that you're into the 40% bracket on.
Exactly, but the thought of having anybody proposing that I lose my state pension...
So you're comfortable with the freeze, you're comfortable with the threshold freeze, but you're not, which was my original suggestion. It was Ray in Whitstable, everybody. Ray in Whitstable calling for the pension to be means-tested. That's not what I was calling for. I was supporting Rachel Reeves' plans for Wednesday, in which case you would recognise the need to suck it up?
Reluctantly.
Yeah,
yes.
Well, no one pay. Well, not many people pay tax unreluctantly, do they? But
no, exactly that. But I think it's a broader picture, isn't it? The issue today is focused right in on this pensions and the possibility of being £800 worse off a year. But as a general principle, nobody should have to be struggling.
I mean, we all agree with that. And of course, I mean, that's why actually Ross in Bangor was so interesting, because usually at this point, it's a bit of a throwaway line to say, obviously, if we've got problems with wealth distribution, you start at the people with the very most. But the billionaire line can be a little bit glib and simplistic, albeit that I use it myself. When he said that the pensioners are the richest cohort in the country, we shouldn't really be surprised by that. But if we accept the logic of going after the people with the most, then we're going after pensioners, Steve.
Well,
whether you like it or not,
included in there, I can't argue against that point. But for a socialist, what should be a socialist government, and they're clearly not.
Yeah.
That's it. There should be a lot of people in the queue. Well, not a lot of people, richer people in the queue before pensioners.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm not here to do comms for the government, although I wish somebody would. but they would argue that, you know, with various... I mean, the mansion tax is going to be much more of an asset-based penalty than an income-based penalty, and I think that is pretty much on the way. And they would also argue that they've gone after people who can afford to pay school fees. They've gone after... I mean, basically, me. They've gone after me. Steve. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there it is. That's what happens when you're a champagne socialist. Eventually, they come for your champagne.
Well, exactly, and not surprisingly, Kirsty Allsop's against a mansions tax, and some people would have it that maybe she owns a mansion, I don't know.
God, perish the thought. She was having a swing at Michael Rosen the other day, which was quite tricky, because I like them both. I appreciate that politically Michael Rosen is probably, I mean, well, maybe a little bit easier to like, but I think she often says some really, really interesting and insightful things. But having a swing at Michael Rosen was for wanting to use his bus pass was a little bit ill-advised, perhaps. Steve, thank you. And Steve there, nailing the topic, actually, in the style of a sort of Cristiano Ronaldo taking a free kick. It is about the gulf between the £800 that he'd be comfortable paying and the £12,000. That Ryan Whitstable wants to steal from him. And I'm teasing. Although there is someone on the front page of the Express today using the word burgle to describe tax, which is not very helpful, is it, when you think about it? But it is very emotive, which is why, once again, we find ourselves exploring the territory that lies between facts and feelings and recognising that the feelings are going to hit people a lot harder than the facts do. 1979, speaking of facts, for the Fiddler's Dram. So I was 3 years out, which isn't bad, really, because I was still in short trousers. You know, I just started at my... so, yeah, 1979 sounds about right. One of the first songs, age seven, from the Hit Parade that I was conscious of, because it was kind of like a novelty song. And I grew up, like a lot of people my age, in a household where there was no pop music. And Dad listened to jazz, mostly. A little bit of classical, Mum liked. A bit of soul, old soul from the 60s. But until Mum started doing fashion shows, when she started a little dress agency, and they obviously needed up-to-the-minute pop tunes to strut up the catwalk to, until that, there was not really any pop music in our house at all. And somehow that one, I think we even had the 45. Who went out? I wonder. I'll ask Mum after the show. Who went out and bought a 45? Who bought the single of A Day Trip to Bangor by Fiddler's Dram? Every day's a school day.
Tom Swarbrick on LBC.
An inquiry that has run on for God knows how many years, which has cost an ungodly sum of money, some £200 million, and they don't seem to have come to any conclusions that I can see so far that you and I have not come to over the course of the few years since COVID kind of went away. We knew that there was a bit of a toxic and chaotic culture in government during the COVID pandemic. We knew that perhaps that toxic and chaotic culture prevented some good decisions being made. The government didn't really have a plan.
Tom Swarbrick, Monday to Friday from 4 p.m. Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app.
Things are really heating up in the country's smallest house.
Dad!
Squealed Mia Mouse.
We could save around £100 by setting the boiler flow temperature to 60 degrees.
And turning radiators down in rooms we don't use.
Interrupted Mo.
Yes, Mo.
Turn them down, not off, said Mia.
Plus finding and blocking drafts,
said Mo.
Should save enough to increase our allowance.
A little saves a lot. You could save around £100 a year off your energy bills with 3 tips at gov.uk/cleanenergy.
At Lathwaite, we go to great lengths to bring you great wine. We go far and wide, searching high, and we mean really high, and low, and we mean stored deep underground in a cave low. Off the shelf? We don't go there. Off the beaten track? We certainly go there. And the best bit is, we even come to you. Order now at lathwaites.co.uk. Lathwaites. We stop at nothing to bring you great wine.
Train to Cambridge and then all aboard the paddleboards. A little bit different, should be fun. Or wobbly, or wet.
The wetsuit's a good look on you, Steve.
Oh, actually, this is very relaxed.
George is up the river cam without a paddle.
Train home, that was such a laugh. I think I might even have a new hobby. Download the Thames Link Railway app to book tickets and save a third off group travel on off-peak journeys. Thames Link Railway, where every stop is a story.
Hurry! Extra savings in Hillary's best ever Black Friday sale end soon. Until the 2nd of December, get an extra 10% off absolutely everything. That's on top of up to 50% off hundreds of made-to-measure blinds, curtains and shutters. Plus, control your blinds from anywhere with a half-price smart hub when you buy any electric blind. Don't forget, with Hillary's, measuring and fitting is always included. So get window wise and book your free in-home appointment today at hillarys.co.uk. Conditions apply.
In her framing shop, Sally's got an eye for precision, plus a computer full of customer orders and precious memories.
There are locks on the doors and sensors on the windows. But what's securing it all is BT Cybersecurity with business antivirus, cloud protection and security awareness training. It helps stop threats before they strike, keeping sensitive business data safe. Because protecting your business takes more than just toughened glass and a steady hand. Cybersecurity is everyone's business. Search BT Business Cybersecurity.
James O'Brien on LBC.
10:48 is the time. I do sometimes think we should, like, you should be able to hear the last eight words that we're exchanging in the studio. Or the last four or five words, and then we can have a little competition for you to guess what we were talking about. So, the last few words involve me saying, my muscle memory involves a finger mouse. To which Keith replied, finger mouse? And I said, it wasn't actually called finger mouse, you know. Who can work out what was going on in the studio from that little vignette, from that little insight into so Eleanor and I were talking, and Keith, as is his wont, interrupted. And I said, my muscle memory uses a finger mouse. Keith went, finger mouse? Keith is rather closer in age to me than you might expect from his sort of youthful portrayal on the programme. Keith went, finger mouse, and I said, it wasn't actually called finger mouse, you know. If anyone can work out exactly what is going on in the studio from that, you can come to our Christmas lunch. 10:49 is the time, if we have one, before everybody gets too excited. And the question is, pensions, I mean, here you go, quick list. Companies House confirms identity verification rollout from 18th of November 2025. Someone has sent me something that looks official saying wealth tax is introduced by Labour to date, but being a bear of very little brain, I don't understand why Companies House confirming identity verification rollout would constitute a wealth tax. Perhaps you could explain. Changes to make land registry transparent on land and property ownership. You'd be astonished how much high-end real estate and agricultural land is owned by weird trusts in places like the Seychelles Islands or Panama. Increase of stamp duty on purchases of second homes from 3% to 5%. Just picking up on the lovely lad in West Clayton talking about how they've done nothing to go after those with the most, because they have. VAT on private school fees. You can still hear the squealing about that one. Changes to pension inheritance tax, increases to capital gains tax, discussions with the Isle of Man, between the Isle of Man and HMRC to try to close some loopholes and cut back on avoidance. A new team focused on ensuring that the wealthy pay the correct amount of tax has reportedly yield about £1.5 billion. In the latest tax year. New powers to tackle economic crime and improve data. Air passenger duty on private jets up 50%. I don't think even the Daily Mail would be able to get a front page out of whining about that one, do you? What? First they came for the private jet users, and I said nothing because I was not a private... No, I don't... Even the Daily Mail would strike. Maybe the Daily Telegraph would have a pop at it. It's stifling creativity. It's stifling wealth. It's stifling. Leave the private jet passengers alone. And finally, the changes on inheritance tax to agricultural land, to farmers, who will be required to pay exactly half in inheritance tax on their estates than everybody else with similarly sized estates has to do. 10:51 is the time. Janet is in Cottingham. Janet, what would you like to say?
Good morning, James. Hello. I'm in agreement with Ray.
Gosh. I mean, I think quite a lot of people are. It's just that you're very hard to politically mobilise pensioners who think they get too much.
Yeah, well, I personally, I was able to retire at 60.
Yes.
I actually qualify for my state pension next month. And to be honest, I totally agree with them. If you're paying 40% tax, why do they need it? Nobody needs that. Nobody. And there are so many pensioners that struggle on the lower end, and if those pensioners are just getting the state pension, and there are a number of those, then maybe we should lift the state pension for those people. We all get too many benefits. You know, you're a pensioner, you get free prescriptions, you get your bus pass, you get your heating allowance, and there are some very selfish old people about.
I mean, you're describing your own cohort as of next month, but I bridle slightly at that. I mean, not every pensioner who wants to hang on to what, because they've, it, I suppose it depends so, how much. I think taking 12 grand out of anybody's income, even if they're earning 100 grand, I think taking 12 grand out of that changes an awful lot of the plans they've made. Does that sound incredibly insulated and luxurious living to you, for me to say that?
Yes, because...
Yeah, I thought it might, just as it came out of my mouth, actually, Janet.
We can't, as a society, educate our young people properly. We have children going to school who are hungry. It opens up a whole can of worms for me, because we're supposed to be a caring society. And the older people get, I've noticed this, seriously.
Go on.
In my group, people get more selfish. I was at the Rigby yesterday, right, down in Twickenham, and people are all paying for a seat.
Yeah.
And you've got people who think it's more important to drink than watch the game. So what you get is people up and down to the bar and hence the toilet half a dozen times during each half.
Yes.
So, I'm sorry, go sit in the bar and you'd be amazed at how many of these are pensioners.
I like this. You've come on with a scattergun today and you're taking pot shots at all sorts of people. Some poor fella who went to the rugby and he finds himself having to visit the lavatory rather more often than usual, and now he's getting torn to shreds by Janet. Torn to shreds.
He had 8 pints in the first half.
He didn't have 8 pints, did he, in the first half? Otherwise, he wouldn't be able to get to the toilet.
These two next to us got up 4 times in the first half to go and get drinks. Now, I did say to them
We've gone a bit off message, but I'm enjoying it, so you fill your boots.
Well, it's just this sense of entitlement of old people.
I'm going to do a phone-in. Who really gets on your nerves? Which old people are the most annoying? 0345 6060973. you're not going to... I mean, what you've done, unintentionally, is highlight how politically impossible it would be to get this passed, because... All you have to do is in opposition, is promise to undo it, and then loads of people migrate towards your party immediately.
That's the problem with our politics, though, isn't it?
Yeah,
first past the post. It's ridiculous, because we don't take care of society, and we used to, and we don't anymore. Our health service is on its knees, and when pensioners talk about, I paid all my life, well, you've used the health service all your life, and you're going to probably need it more as you get older.
That's another good point. And Dave says Janet is spot on. I don't know. I guess I'm just more comfortable with the idea of a taper. So I got a message suggesting that you could do it quite straightforwardly than just a guillotine that comes down on people who have, for their entire working life, been expecting that £12,000 a year. And then they wake up one morning after a Rachel Reeves budget and have to accommodate and adjust for a life in which they will never receive it. And there'll be a point at which, I tell you what would be interesting is where the consensus would be. So the point at which 12 grand doesn't matter. So as soon as I was talking about, if you're living on 100 grand, let's say net, then 12 grand doesn't matter. It does. I mean, it's the difference. I mean, it does matter. Oh, I'm not going to win this argument, am I? Because you're talking to people who cannot imagine getting by on 100 grand a year. That would be like living on a Kardashian-style reality show. And when you look at the percentages, when you look at the breakdown, when you look at the number of homes that are likely to be affected by a so-called mansion tax, you realise how much public discourse is, I mean, ludicrously out of touch with the economic realities of most people. And the conversation is dominated by the kind of people who would argue, but actually I don't think you realise 12 grand is quite a large chunk out of a £100,000 income. And unfortunately, I'm kind of one of them. Whereas Janet, I suspect, makes a lot more sense to a lot more people than I do when she just simply says, if you look at what most pensioners are having to get by on, the idea that we should be framing economic policy based upon the volume of the violins being played by people on six-figure incomes who might lose 12. Anyway, we've ended up talking about means testing. I blame Blummin' Ray in Whitstable, honestly. Thank you, Janet. Norman is in Epsom. Norman, what would you like to say?
Yeah, hi, James.
Hello.
Good morning.
Well,
so,
welcome.
James, I'm not in favour of means testing pensions. I think the government should start with getting rid of the triple lock, which seems to be unaffordable.
Well, that hits everybody, doesn't it, effectively?
And that hits everyone.
Even the people at the bottom end of the income scale, even the pensioners at the bottom end of the income scale.
Well, then there are other, I guess there are other things that they can do to tweak and other benefits they can give to those at the bottom end. But start with the triple lock. But if they are going to means test pensions, then means test everything. Means test all benefits. Why aren't all benefits means tested? So why isn't the NHS access means tested then going forward for everyone? If you're earning above a certain amount, means test your access. If you go to the doctor...
Yeah, see, this is why I'm not in favour of means... Oddly, I'm not in favour of means testing, and you've reminded me why, because I like universal benefits.
I like universal benefits. I think it harmonises and brings us together as a nation that we are sharing this thing. Otherwise, let's just go to a full US style, you're on your own, whatever you save is whatever you save. And if you don't earn enough to save, then come 65, 67, too bad. I mean, the US has private pension savings, 401ks, etc., which, you know, are the mercy of the stock market. But their pension, their effective pension, Social Security, they don't tax, they don't means test.
So there's a general agreement that quote, something must be done, end quotes, that the system is skewed heavily in favour of pensioners, but all we're really quibbling about is what it is that must be done, right?
I think the main problem in the UK has been in the last, well, since the financial crisis, or even a little bit before, since we've really set this 2%, 2.5% inflation rate, is that many employers don't want to pay much above that. And so, therefore, for a generation, salaries have been stagnant. That is the biggest problem in the UK, that people just don't earn enough.
You know, and that GDP, makes the threshold freeze. Well, actually, it has an impact on the threshold freeze, doesn't it? But it means it doesn't hit, it doesn't bite as hard as it would do, or it doesn't affect as many people as it would do if salaries were going up. But if they were going up, people would be more comfortable about it.
People would be more comfortable. And that's really the UK's biggest problem is salaries have been stagnant, GDP per capita has been stagnant.
Yeah, and very little of what Rachel Reeves is announcing in pursuit of growth is considered likely to deliver the growth that we all recognise we need, but nobody is quite sure what would. Can I ask you a cheeky question?
Yes, please.
Can I ask you two cheeky questions?
Yeah, you can ask me as many as you like.
Thank you, Norman. I'm late for the news, so I'll confine it to two. You are an old age pensioner, I presume.
Not quite. I'm 62 in a few weeks, so I've got a little bit of way to go. But
my next question.
I still work.
Okay, no, because I was going to say, do you think there are any people called Norman who are not pensioners? And here you are.
Norman Cook.
Norman Cook, yes.
Fat boy slim.
There you go. No, you've shot me down in flames twice in one phone call. And then I was going to ask whether it's my encroaching age that's making me more interested in these matters. But I don't think it is, because I'm still as ignorant as I ever was. I'm just more intrigued by the politics of it. Thank you, Norman. It's 11:01.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom, a leading employers group has called on ministers to spare business from further tax hikes in Wednesday's budget. The Confederation of British Industry has warned of a stop-start economy if they're targeted again. Businesses are still reeling after bearing the brunt of £40 billion of tax rises in last year's budget. Speaking in London this morning, CBI boss Ray Newton-Smith said the country can't afford another decade of stagnation.
All short-term politics leads to is long-term decline, and that means making hard choices for growth now, before they get harder. Having the courage to take two tough decisions rather than 20 easier ones. Raising the headroom to make promises stick. It means one or two broad tax rises rather than death by a thousand taxes. 20 bad choices don't make for a good system.
The business secretary Peter Kyle's also been speaking at the same event. He stressed to business leaders the Chancellor will make fair and necessary choices later this week.
My pledge to you today is that we will do everything we can to turn the corner. We don't intend to do it to you, but we will do it with you. We will build a pro-business, pro-wealth creation, pro-growth Britain.
The Kremlin says it's yet to receive any information from the Ukraine peace talks held in Geneva over the weekend. US officials say the discussions with Ukraine resulted in meaningful progress in efforts to end the war with Russia. Talks are continuing today. Exclusive data shared with LBC shows nearly 250,000 children in England are leaving primary school overweight or obese. Analysis shows young people from the most deprived areas are most likely to fall into these categories. The government says it's spending £500 million to tackle child poverty. Charities have praised David Cameron for going public with his prostate cancer diagnosis. The former Prime Minister's revealed he successfully was treated earlier this year for the disease. Lord Cameron has also renewed calls for an increasing screening programme for men most at risk of the disease. And a task force commissioned by the Prime Minister is calling for urgent changes to the way the nuclear industry is regulated. Its report says the UK has an overly complex system which delays new power plants being built. Environmental groups say investing in renewable power is the best way to keep energy bills affordable. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 10 at 95.50. The pound buys $1.30 and a euro 13. LBC weather, cloudy with sunny spells for most today. Some outbreaks of rain in the northeast of England and a milder day, a high of 11 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Let's hear from the Chancellor, Geoffrey.
From the Chancellor, Nigel. Chancellor John.
Norman. Kenneth.
Gordon.
Alistair.
George.
Philip.
Sajid.
Rishi.
Nadine.
Kwasi.
Jeremy.
And now Rachel. Another year, another budget. Over the past 40 years, we've seen it all. Our experts will continue to filter through the noise and uncertainty, helping you make the most of your tax allowances. Hargreaves Lansdown, helping Britain invest through it all. Capital at risk. Tax rules apply and can change.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
Five minutes after 11 is the time. It's a serious one, this, but the missing word round works at both ends of the swimming pool. This is very much at the deep end, but I wonder how easy it will be for you to guess if I tell you that the first name of the Johnson I'm about to refer to is Boris. Okay, so here's a quick missing word round for the next hour, by which I mean I will hopefully remember at some point in the next hour to provide you with the answer to the question. Which word or words have I removed from the following headline? Johnson took blank, or blanks. Johnson took blank as NHS warned that COVID could overwhelm system. Johnson took blank, or blanks, as NHS warned that COVID could overwhelm system. I think I'm going to demand specifics on this. Speaking of specifics, Daryl is perilously close to getting an invitation to our Christmas party. If you're just tuning in, I shared with you a moment ago the details of an exchange between the production team and myself shortly before we came back on air, and it went something like this. I got it a little bit wrong in the telling, actually. So I would say I'm trying to retrain my muscle memory onto the finger mouse, away from the other one. So I say my muscle memory doesn't like the finger mouse. At which point Keith said, finger mouse? And I said, it's not actually called finger mouse, you know. And I wondered what on earth you thought we might have been talking about. And Daryl has got two of the key elements correct. And may indeed have got 100% correct if I hadn't actually misremembered the conversation that I was having about 4 seconds before I told you what had been contained within the conversation. All of which leads us to the people who've just tuned in and what on earth they're making of what they've just listened to. We may never know. Funnily enough, I wasn't going to be talking about this in the next hour, but that weird little mea culpa I did at the top of the last hour just made me think about obese children in a way. When I was doing my performative obnoxiousness about overweight people, I always forgot about the children and how it would feel to be on the receiving end of that kind of rhetoric. Oh, you've just got to eat less and exercise more. When even in, these kind of days, the stigma that you carry. You know, I've got the most wholesome algorithms. God knows how. I've told you before on social media, when you're on like the little reels that you get, I have got the most wholesome algorithms. The nastiest ones I've got at the moment involve people trying to steal parcels from doorsteps. Did I tell you this last week? I think I told you this last week. People trying to steal parcels from doorsteps that then sort of explode in their faces and cover them in sort of neon powder, bright pink and bright blue powder. But bizarrely, I've also, obviously, found myself feeling quite moved by footage of overweight children training. There's a lad from Hull who was a carer for his father. This one just popped up on my algorithm last night, and he was having a terrible time of it, to the point of contemplating the worst imaginable actions, and he just decided to run the entire length of the country. I think his actual handle is the lad from Hull, but I will remember his real name as soon as you remind me. And I guess because I've watched that a couple of times now, it's incredibly powerful. He became the youngest person to run the length of the entire country. I now get quite a lot of wholesome footage of overweight children really going on kind of journeys of physical health. And what's extraordinary about it is the obvious impact it has on their mental health. The way in which children, you know, you get little moments of cheerfulness. So kids who really don't exercise, and there's a few grown-ups in the business of taking these children under their wing, and they find children who really don't exercise, children who've got big weight problems, quite often children who are being bullied, children who are being isolated, alienated as a consequence of their weight, and they get taken under the wings of some sort of PE, like latter-day PE teachers, effectively, or PT instructors, personal trainers, and they go on these journeys. And I think you're supposed to marvel at the sort of before and after of it, the shedding of the weight, because I guess the shorter you are, the younger you are, the more visible it is to see that the width reduce. You lose 3 stone when you're only 5 foot. It's going to be more visible than it is if you're 6 foot, isn't it? But the thing that strikes me most, well, two things, actually. One is their skin. The glow that comes to their cheeks, the healthier they get, the more they begin to glow. And the smiles. The way in which children who have almost consigned themselves to a lifetime of obesity change mentally as they change physically. And it is, I keep using the word wholesome, but it's really beautiful. And by the way, I know that a lot of those doorstep exploding packages things are AI, and I don't care. They still make me laugh. But the trend that I don't think is AI on my socials, on my algorithms, that is most uplifting, because in some ways you're just laughing at naughty people with the parcels that blow up on doorsteps, it is currently, I don't know what it will be next, goodness knows why my algorithms are so wholesome compared to everybody else's, I just veer from ping pong, loads of table tennis content, to soldiers returning from war to surprise their family members, to people getting ambushed by parcels they're trying to steal from people's doorsteps, to overweight young people going on fitness courses that change them physically, but for my money, more importantly, mentally. Which is why this story stuck with me. LBC's done this research. My colleague Connor Hand has written it up for the website. You should go and have a look. You can find it on the app, on the LBC app. 250,000 children in England, which is all that we've looked at for now, are leaving primary school either overweight or obese. Okay, that's bad enough, right? But here's the kicker. Obesity rates among the poorest children are nearly twice as high as those of their wealthiest classmates. How many years have you been listening to me now? How many years? Of all the subjects that we kind of know the answers to, but nothing ever changed, what is the most dispiriting? It could easily be this one, couldn't it? I don't know all the answers, because whenever we turn our attention to subjects like this one, you have a habit of taking me by surprise. But there is a real sadness to the failure to move the needles. It's in many ways what Jamie Oliver has dedicated much of his life to, trying to reach the kind of children that he went to school with, who were never, if they hadn't been lucky enough to have him in their class, were never going to discover the simple delights of fresh and healthy food. He'd tell stories about some of them, some of the lads that he was knocking about with when he was primary school age, already working in the kitchens at his dad's pub. And I can tell you, his face lights up, speaking of glowing, when he remembers that simple joy of introducing somebody, being raised on a diet of Finder's crispy pancakes and takeaway food or battered sausages, to something fresh and delicious. and the way that it changes you, the way that it changes you mentally as well as physically. And, of course, part of the problem is going to be contained within that class-based analysis, that socioeconomic status, because somehow we have allowed food, healthy food, to be portrayed as a middle-class obsession. Again, I'm being very Catholic with a big C today, aren't I? I'm doing lots of self-flagellation. But I used to pull a funny face and use a strange voice when I talked about couscous or quinoa. Oh, couscous. You know what I mean? Oh, I'd be having a quinoa sandwich. And I would do it, even when I'm conscious in somewhere in my brain of how ridiculous it is to portray healthy food as... Would I even go as far as suggesting effeminate? Is that what I'm doing when I do a voice like that? I'm having a quinoa. I'm having a quinoa. Pass the quinoa, Tristram. Am I being effeminate or is it... I don't know. But the idea that healthy food is suspect, that healthy food is a bit dodgy. You remember the mothers pushing pasties through the chain-link fences at the schools where Jamie was trying to get their own children to eat more healthily. I get that more now, because when we first started talking about that, I was either not a parent or my children were very, very young. It's an act of love sometimes. Give a child a Greg sausage roll. And they're so happy. Give them a pack of Haribo. They're so happy. And what does a parent want if not for their children to be happy? You understand how that little bit of our brain has been hardwired or rewired since we were kids. And mum and dad were incredibly strict about stuff. Whether it worked better or not, I don't know. But, you know, the idea of having to finish your vegetables on the plate and not being allowed to eat sweets except on Fridays and all of the little rules that we had and the bags of sweets that we had, which were approximately a tenth of the size of the bags of sweets that we get now, our brain has been rewired so that we think, oh, I'll just get a bag of Maltesers. And the Maltesers is now a family bag. I don't think, can you still buy little bags of Maltesers? Is there anything between the fun-sized ones that you sort of buy just for trick or treat, and then the family size ones that you get at the cinema? Is there anything in between those two? I don't know. But we do it because we think it's an act of love. Your child loves chips, and you love your child, so you give him some chips. And then fast forward 2 years, and the poor kid is obese. Why would poor children be twice as fat as their wealthier classmates? All right, any answer you've got. Obvious, not obvious. And either side of the telescope, either end of the telescope. Why are wealthy kids twice as healthy as poorer kids? Because it's a little bit counterintuitive. For almost all of human history, being poor meant being scrawny, didn't it? And being wealthy, this is why Rubens-esque figures, look at art from the 19th, 18th century. You would not get on the cover of Vogue if you were sitting for a portrait painter in the 19th, 18th, 17th, 16th century. Thinness, slimness was not valued because it was a sign of poverty. Think about that. It's one of those little things that I can sometimes come close to obsessing about. Because I love transformation. I love watching how things can change. Everything can change. If you lose sight of that, you lose sight of hope sometimes. But until relatively recently, I'd say until probably the 1970s, 80s, I mean, literally in my lifetime, being overweight became a sign of being poor, and being close to underweight became a sign of being healthy. That's absolutely bonkers. And it will not be unique to the United Kingdom by any stretch of the imagination, but we will be worse at this than other countries. Whenever we look at the statistics on this kind of thing, the United Kingdom and the United States are often way ahead of everywhere else. There's like smaller exceptions, and I think South Korea oddly has quite a bad record on this front. But generally speaking, the UK has a real, real problem. You go to India, as Alice reminds us, and being very, very thin is still going to be a sign of poverty, not a sign of wealth. I'm talking about a very Western development, a very Western reversal, where in the course of my lifetime, being overweight has become an emblem of poverty. And that, at first glance, makes no sense whatsoever, does it? Because, obviously, the less you have, the less you eat, and the less you eat, the less weight you carry. But that's not true in our country anymore. That's not true in our society anymore. Why? 03456060973. And the answers will almost have to address both ends of the telescope, won't they? Or both sides of the scales, if you pardon the pun. Because there has to be a reason why being wealthy makes you more likely to be healthy, just as being poor makes you more likely to be fat. It's not just going to be one side of the scales that plummets as the other side rockets upwards. There's going to be people putting weights and removing weights from both sides of the scales until, if you're poor, you're twice as likely, your children are twice as likely to be obese as if you're wealthy. And listen, poor people do not love their children less than wealthy people. In fact, you know, phrases like seen and not heard, and the invention of nannies and nurseries is the preserve of the wealthy. So why on earth would poor parents be presiding over the obesification of their own children while the wealthier kids in their class are staying slimmer and healthier? I think this is the most important question of our age, actually. You can extrapolate it into NHS costs, life expectancy. You can extrapolate it into everything, mental health. Think of those kids almost written themselves off on my wholesome social media feed. And then they get signed up for something, often by their mums, which means their mums know. So a mum, and if you're this mum, I want to talk to you. You're watching your child get obese and you hate it. But you are also doing it. How does that work? What do you need? What don't you know? You're watching a child get obese because the kids I'm watching on these reels are kids whose mums have often signed them up for things. And sometimes they turn up reluctantly. They don't really want to be there, but they're lucky to fall under the spell of a charismatic trainer. And the next thing you know, they're going on runs every day. Often together, often a little group of obese children running around the park, getting slimmer, getting healthier and getting happier with almost every trip, every step. Then the mums that have signed them up for that are the mums that have fed them up like that. Not here to castigate you, mum. Quite the opposite. I'm here to ask you to help us understand how it happens. How does it work? Because it's heartbreaking, right? Why are poor kids in England twice as likely to be obese than their wealthiest classmates? And the research that LBC has done is school-specific. So you can't just say, oh, the menus are better at private schools. This is a class, 40 kids. Find me the five poorest and the five wealthiest, and the five poorest will be twice as fat as the five wealthiest. I may have simplified Connor's research slightly there, but you take my point. Why? That's the question. Why? What explains the twin phenomena of slim, wealthy children and obese, poor children? Hit the numbers now. You will get through. 03456060973.
This is LBC. Listen on the move with the new LBC app.
A Southern Train is a place where you can have more me time. A chance to recharge yourself and your phone. To stretch out, sit back, and when you hear "all change, please," you'll know you already have. Go with your flow and save with advanced tickets at southernrailway.com. Terms apply.
Waitrose presents...
I really fancy a mince pie.
One man's selfless journey from sofa to kitchen.
And then up.
For a number one golden mince pie with juicy golden raisins, cherries and apricots and zesty limoncello.
With some cream.
For a number one golden mince pie with juicy golden raisins, cherries and apricots, zesty limoncello and a dollop of fresh cream.
Limoncello.
Waitrose, the home of food lovers. Selected stores subject to availability.
How's the business going?
We're busier than ever, but struggling to get the staff we need.
Recruiting can be such a distraction. We gave Job Centre Plus a try, and they've really helped us out.
Really?
Yeah, it was dead easy. We got our own employer advisor, Julie, who helped advertise our jobs, shortlisted candidates for us, and let us interview at the Job Centre. We've hired some great people, and Job Centre Plus really took the hassle out of it, and there was no fee.
Brilliant. That's straight on my to-do list.
Find out more at business.gov.uk/recruit. Eligibility criteria apply.
Join Andre Rieu at OVO Arena, Wembley, London on 18th of September. Book now at andrerieu.com.
James O'Brien on LBC. Listen on your smart speaker. Just say, play LBC.
It is 23 minutes after 11. Speaking of, we haven't done any Idiot's Corner today. Is it a nicer show if we ignore the people clamouring to get into Idiot's Corner? Is it a better listen, do you think? We need some algorithms, don't we, to have a look at it. But I'm getting nice messages today. This is lovely from Daniel. I don't think he was expecting this to be read out. Would you like to hear Daniel's message? He goes, hello, James. This is Daniel, told you, in Penrith. I've never used Alexa before to contact you. I'm just testing it now. Over. Over. Oh, I love you, Daniel. Over. Imagine if I had to do that every time I said something. Over. And was waiting for you to respond. Over. I don't know. Do you know what I do? Instead of saying over, over, I just say the phone number now, but as a sort of Pavlov's dog reaction. It's entirely reflex. 03456060973. I'm not saying the phone number, I'm saying the time. I don't need to say over. That means I'm pausing. Over. It's 11:23. Why would... Because this wouldn't have been true in 1975, would it? It wouldn't have been true in 1965, 1955, 1945, 1935, 1925, 1915 or 1905. I could carry on. It definitely wouldn't have been true in 1895. In 1888, but it's true in 2025. Poor children will be fatter than wealthy children. According to our latest research, twice as fat, twice as likely to be obese. Why? Jamie is in Chelmsford. Jamie, what do you think?
Morning, James. How are you doing?
Very well, mate.
Good, man. Okay, I think it's partly down to laziness, if you want the truth.
Oh, no, we said we weren't going to attack anybody. No,
I'm not attacking anyone.
Well,
I'm
you
not,
are. You just called them lazy.
No, I'm just putting it out there.
Go on.
I'm just saying that with... My nan had a sweet shop years ago, just covering a couple of subjects that you talked about.
Oh, man. I bet you had a lot of friends.
I did. Yeah, it's a very sticky friend, shall we say.
Yeah.
And so basically, you do see some children, not all, I'm not going down the fattest lane or anything, but sure. Some children are a mirror image of one or both of their parents.
Yes.
And that's true.
Yes, I know it is.
Yeah. And basically, I think that the wealthier, if you like, the more fortunate have, basically, they will shop in places like Waitrose, somewhere where the product is
I don't buy this. I mean,
organic,
bits,
I should say.
No,
maybe
it doesn't have to be organic to be thin. I mean, we've got a Morrison's and a Lidl near me. And okay. I don't live in a wealthy part of London. I live in a wealthy bit of an unwealthy part of London. But
what I was trying to say was, you will find generally, or as far as I'm aware,
yeah.
You'd find generally wealthy people won't go and buy TV dinners and takeaway snacks. I just feel that. We had a guy come round trick-or-treated, big-facted, wearing a skeleton T-shirt. Oh, yeah, I have some cake.
I'm not laughing with you. I'm laughing at you. That's cruel. You're mocking an overweight child.
Okay, I'm looking at an overweight child because fundamentally... Yeah, okay,
and you're calling his parents lazy? Well, they might be depressed. I mean, it's self-care. There's all sorts... And also not knowing, because I don't think any parent...
Yeah.
I mean, maybe you disagree, but no, there's a disconnect. No parent wants their child to be obese. Do you think they stop seeing it?
I think that's a really good point.
Yeah.
Well, the thing that you just sat there and said just 30 seconds ago about the fact that the kids don't see it.
Yeah.
Maybe they don't, but the parents should.
Yeah, but I don't think the parents do. I think there comes a point where somehow you kind of... I don't know that any of us actually see the real us in the mirror.
It's do you like, think it could be down to keeping kids happy?
Yes, I do. I do. And this is why I don't like your lazy analysis, although it will apply to some people. If the only way... There was a Labour politician years ago who talked about, and he got absolutely kicked for it, but I understood what he meant when he talked about not wanting to tax cigarettes and alcohol as heavily as some people were telling him to, because he said, if you're poor, that can often be your only pleasure. And listen, this is a minefield because it is also going to shorten your life and make you poorer. But in the context of I've got an hour of life ahead of me, what's the best thing that's going to happen to me in that hour? Some people would respond, it is going to be sparking up that fag or drinking that lager.
And, would you agree, have you been anywhere or any of the listeners been anywhere, like a supermarket, for example,
yeah.
Supermarket or a shop or something, and the child banging on, I want some sweets, I want some sweets, and the mum or the dad says, oh, I haven't got the money, and then turns around and buys 20 fags.
And not anymore, but back in the day, you would have that. But you don't want them to do both. It's not either or. The problem actually might be, but then why would this be less applicable to wealthy people? Is that parents have become worse at saying no. It's not laziness. But also, if you can't treat your children... a little brief cliche, okay, a bit of stereotyping. You can't treat your children to a nice holiday or new trainers or new clothes. You can't treat your children to karate lessons or whatever it is they're asking for this week, a new video game, an Xbox. But you can buy them a bag of Haribo. So the poorer you are... You don't become less keen to treat your children. It's just that the palette of treats that is available to you, and I know the word treat is unhelpful in some contexts when you're discussing obesity and diet, but not in this context, because that is what the parent thinks they are doing and that is what the child thinks they are getting. So, you know, you sort of say to the children, we're going to go to Lapland this Christmas to see Santa Claus. That is unlikely to be a conversation that is being had in the country's poorest households. But that little look on the face that you get in return for that as a parent, you get a much, much, much watered-down version of it when you bung them a packet of sweets. I think that might be part of it. If you're trying to unravel the link between wealth and obesity and the reversal that we've seen in the course of our lifetimes, I think that might well be part of it. The things that constitute treats are within reach of the poorest people. But the people who are not poor can reach treats that are not going to shorten their children's lives while expanding their waistbands. Thanks for that, Jamie. I got loads of calls on this. I should probably shut up and take some, shouldn't I? But first, Dominic Ellis has your headlines.
The head of the CBI trade body has urged the Chancellor not to inflict death by 1,000 taxes in her budget on Wednesday. The Confederation of British Industry has warned of a stop-start economy if firms are targeted again. The Kremlin says it hasn't received an official update from the Ukraine peace talks held in Geneva over the weekend. US officials say the discussions with Kyiv resulted in meaningful progress in efforts to end the war with Russia. An exclusive data shared with LBC shows nearly 250,000 children in England are leaving primary school overweight or obese. Analysis shows young people from the most deprived areas are most likely to fall into those categories. LBC weather cloudy with sunny spells for most. Some outbreaks of rain for the northeast of England. A milder day, a high of 11 degrees.
This is LBC.
At Laithwaite, we go to great lengths to bring you great wine. We go far and wide, searching high, and we mean really high, and low, and we mean stored deep underground in a cave low. Off the shelf? We don't go there. Off the beaten track? We certainly go there. And the best bit is, we even come to you. Order now at laithwaite.co.uk. Laithwaite. We stop at nothing to bring you great wine.
Things are really heating up in the country's smallest house.
Dad!
Squealed Mia Mouse.
We could save around £100 by setting the boiler flow temperature to 60 degrees.
And turning radiators down in rooms we don't use.
Interrupted Mo.
Yes, Mo.
Turn them down, not off,
said Mia.
Plus finding and blocking drafts,
said Mo.
Should save enough to increase our allowance.
A little saves a lot. You could save around £100 a year off your energy bills with 3 tips at gov.uk/cleanenergy.
There's an old Thai saying that roughly translates as, the family who takes the internet on holiday can locate a less crowded beach. Particularly handy, my friends, if it's peak mating season for nippy little crabs. Pack the internet with an eSIM from Airalo. That's Airalo.
They did it again. Flour instead of flowers. On my birthday. And 95 minutes late. But it's hard to leave when you've shared so much. Your postcode. Your gluten intolerance. Then I saw it. 25% off your first Ocado shop. Plus free delivery. And I just knew I'd found the online supermarket of my dreams. Ocado. Life delivered. Geographical restrictions. Min spend £60. Max saving £20. Charges and Christmas restrictions apply. New customers only. Terms at ocado.com.
This is LBC with James O'Brien. Call 0345 6060973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
32 minutes after 11. Richer people usually have bigger houses, so the kids have to take more steps every day to get around their home. But that is accompanied by a smiling emoji. So I don't know that that one is offered up entirely in good faith. It's quite funny, though. Processed food and youth clubs. Fewer free youth clubs than ever before, much less organised outdoor activities. So that's another reason why lazy's not fair. You go, but then again, what's stopping you taking the kids for a game of football on Saturday? Answer, pay. Subs. Poorer you are, the harder it will be to meet the costs of kit and the costs of, you know, half-time oranges or whatever it is you have these days. Are you properly addressing the question of whether or not we should do more whimsy and less Idiot's Corner when it comes to my inbox? It's a happier show. Well, I don't know. Sometimes people really demand to be put in Idiot's Corner. But whimsy creates a different mood during our time together. Here's a wonderful example for which I have to thank Jane. So obviously I miss the massive majority of texts and WhatsApps that come into the programme. But sometimes one grabs my attention because I'm thinking, what on earth preceded that? And here's a really good example. I was wrong, facepalm emoji, apologies, wrote Jane at 11:30. Which obviously prompted me to think, what on earth was she wrong about? I'll click on history. I'll have a look at the last message Jane sent to the programme. And the last message Jane sent to the programme was at 10:43 and it said, great show, James. So between 10:43 and 11:30, we did something that caused Jane to go from great show, James, to I was wrong, apologies. But I wasn't happy with that. So I thought maybe it's actually a follow-up to a text before the last text sent to the programme. So I went back to the history icon and I read this. It was the Wurzels who sang The Day We Went to Bangor. And of course it wasn't, as I established, approximately 34 plus 17, 40, 51 minutes ago. It was, in fact, Fiddler's Dram. So Jane was apologising for getting the band wrong, not for describing the show as great, which means Jane thinks she's still listening to a great show. Yes! Mike's in Brentwood. Mike, why are poor children twice as likely to be obese than their wealthiest classmates?
I think it's a lot to do with area as well. My wife is a consultant, a paediatrician, with a specialist in diabetes in an East London hospital.
Blimey. So can husbands get Ray? Can you get a Ray Liotta's husband? Is there such a thing as a Ray Liotta's husband? No, I don't think there is, but carry on.
And she deals with this stuff day in, day out.
Clearly.
And a lot of it is trying to educate the parents that bring obese children in. And they say, well, look, you know, what will they eat? And they say, well, the only thing they eat is chicken nuggets.
Yeah.
Well, have you tried giving them? Yeah, but they won't eat healthy stuff.
Yeah.
The other thing is the
how do you change
experience.
That? How, what would your wife say if she was here? What is it mean? I know there's no magic bullet, but what do you do?
They try their very, very best with a huge team of doctors and nurses to try and educate. But some of it, very unfortunately, just falls on deaf ears.
Is there a point where you go hungry? Is there a point when your child goes hungry because they won't eat the food that's in front of them until they're hungry enough to eat it? Victorian? Yeah. I don't know.
I often say that, you know, who buys the food?
Yeah.
You know, the kids aren't the one in control of the budget and the money.
Yeah.
The other thing is that there's this, I can't give you the precise number, but is a huge, huge frequency of fast food, cheap places per square mile.
Yeah. Well, we all know that's true. We've seen it.
Yeah, these kids pass these places on the way home. They hang out there with their friends. That's their part of their social circle is they go to the fried chicken shop. That's what they do after school.
Yeah, but that's why I'm just nudging you back towards this research that has been shared with LBC because it is kids at the same school. This is going to hold true again across a classroom full of children. So again, the middle class kids are just as likely to be walking past these chicken shops as the poorer kids. Which leads us into the next bit, which is a message from Corpsey that sits alongside what you're telling us, which is that indoor climbing is £13 an hour. The local laser tag is £6.50 a game. Swimming is over £5 per person for a 2-hour session. Scouts is full and the roller disco is £8 for 2 hours. So the wealthier kid could actually be eating roughly the same amount of fast food and sweets, but they're getting out and burning it off more.
The other thing as well that just crossed my mind briefly is perhaps richer parents have got cars, whereas their poorer counterparts might not. So therefore, that might be a reason why those more wealthy ones aren't going past the fast food place on the way home, because they're driving straight home. I don't know.
Yeah, no, I like it. We're all thinking out loud, because I immediately come back and say, well, that means they're walking more.
Yeah.
But it doesn't. I mean, it doesn't necessarily mean that they're walking. But no, there's a lot there. And that's why I think today's conversation is so interesting, because it's not doing simple solutions. And it becomes more interesting when you add the why to the wealthy, healthy children, rather than focusing entirely on the poor, obese children, because it will cut both ways. So yes, of course, diet is going to be a big part of it, but the ease of exercise, the closing down of public spaces, the helicopter parenting, the fear, the paranoia of what will happen if our children are in the park all night. Not all night, but if they're playing football. The likelihood that there isn't anywhere for them to play football in the way that there was growing up. There's a park near me, and it's got a basketball court in it. It's really nice, actually. It's a great work by Hounslow Borough Council. They've done loads of stuff around ours lately, which is... There's a new playground, actually, that's opened as well, that's really nice. But the... A few things when I'm walking the dog in the evening, a few things actually delight me more than a proper game of basketball going on the basketball court, or a proper kickabout going on in the cage to the side of the playground where you can hear echoes of your own childhood. And that's quite rare these days, you know. There's a sort of jumpers for goalpost type stuff. I don't want to get all dewy-eyed and nostalgic, but if you're living on chicken nuggets and you're exercising like we did when we were young, it's not that big a deal. If you're living on chicken nuggets and you're not really exercising at all, it becomes a big deal. And there's your healthy, wealthy, poor, obese paradigm, dichotomy in a nutshell. Thank you, Mike. Ross is in Burgess Hill. Ross, what made you pick up the phone?
What made me pick up the phone, James, was mostly the first call on this about parents being lazy, kids being lazy, and that rolled me up enough to call. So
good.
I'm a strength and conditioning coach, and I actually help wealthy teenagers get fit for sport and things like that. So wow. I kind of help the other end of the aspect here.
Sure.
I also know why not just having access to trainers like me. I wanted to more tap into, there's actually a biology and a biological reason why kids in poverty might be double the rates of obesity as well. Absolutely. So our foundations as cavemen was to be safe. When we're in poverty, we lose that aspect of safety. So our nervous systems tend to be more in a fight or flight state of mind. And then we go into survival. And survival can mean that our appetite increases because we're trying to fuel and get calories in for maybe potential unsafety ahead. So often you'll find that the highest calorie foods are the cheapest. So yes. Access to fast food and chicken nuggets from Iceland and all of those terms that have already been mentioned.
Yeah.
But also you'll find that the rates of snacking between those meals, because they're not satiating children enough, they're more likely to be
nutrients. You're talking about nutrition. This is nutrition
and things like that.
Nutrition versus feeling full.
Yes,
being
exactly
nourished.
That, because yes, and when we're like not feeling safe, which poverty puts us into, we lose that ability to feel full. We have increased appetite. So even the change of stress hormones can make a child want food more, want to snack more, want to keep going. And it's almost another way of getting a dopamine hit, that fast happiness.
Oh, you're brilliant, man. This is so Jamie in Chelmsford. Should be hanging his head in shame, albeit that, you know, he served it up in a winning and a charming manner. It goes deep, this stuff.
It's very Daily Mail to
isn't it?
Blame these people. They're not working hard enough. They're not trying hard enough.
They're lazy.
When we are in poverty, our stress levels increase and we're less likely to make better choices.
And Emma adds to that, and you'll appreciate this, but again, it's not immediately obvious. People will feed children who say they're hungry, and children will be hungrier if they're missing vital vitamins and minerals. It's one of the hellish paradoxes of modern life, that you can be stuffed full and still starving hungry. Because you're not nourished.
Absolutely.
You're not.
And then put that on top of access to good quality sports clubs, coaching, advice. It's a poor recipe, unfortunately, for the hardest up.
Yeah, calling someone lazy explains nothing, does it? I mean, actually, literally explains nothing. It's just a way of passing social responsibility.
It's exactly the same as telling people on benefits that they're not trying hard enough.
Yeah. And here's a little think tank, or so-called think tank, from Tufton Street, when it's really a lobby group that won't tell you who pays its wages, but has just released some extraordinary research showing that we definitely shouldn't actually require companies to do more labelling or pay more taxes or try and take responsibility for what they're doing to our children. And they're going to be invited onto every programme under the sun. I made that up. I mean, it will happen, and it has happened, and it will happen again, because it happened with fossil fuels, and it happened with tobacco, and it will happen, and does happen, with junk food, unhealthy food. The idea that it's a nanny state that would require companies not to be harvesting huge amounts of money from shortening the lives of society's poorest children. And that adds a new dimension to the wealth, health, obesity, poverty paradigm, doesn't it? Because the kind of people working for the kind of companies and individuals who are funding these dodgy lobby groups that call themselves think tanks and congregate around Tufton Street are going to be wealthy. So it won't be their children that are inhaling the Haribo as if it were going out of fashion. It won't be their children who are full but still hungry because they're not taking on the nutrition and the minerals and the vitamins that they need. It will be other people's children. It will be poor people's children, whose health deteriorates as they get richer. Thank you, Ross. It's coming up to 11:45. I told you, and this is what gets me out of bed in the mornings, even if it feels like territory that we've explored together before, there's always rocks we haven't looked under. There's always callers we haven't heard from before. There's always experiences that we don't share. There's always new ways of looking at things, and that's why, you know, it was important for Jamie to reach for laziness, because we usually do. And if we don't, someone will do it for us. But it solves nothing and actually answers next to none of the questions that are posed by the simple statistical observation that among the 250,000 children in England leaving primary school either overweight or obese, the likelihood of them being among the poorest in class is doubled compared to those among the wealthiest. It is 11:45. You're probably aware of some very strange shenanigans going on with regard to Ukraine and the so-called peace deal that the White House claimed it had masterminded, and then extraordinarily claimed it hadn't. And then I think claimed it had again. I've told you a million times that once you have destroyed truth, once objective truth, once evidence-based politics or evidence-based journalism has been destroyed, absolutely anything goes. So you can have Marco Rubio saying in the same news cycle that he did and then he didn't, then he did again, take responsibility for the peace deal that Ukraine are having inflicted upon them. You also have, if I said the world's wrongest man, who would you think of? Who has been anointed by this programme, quite correctly, despite all the competition, usually also appearing on the editorial pages of the Daily's Telegraph and Mail. If I said the world's wrongest man, who would you think of first? Exactly. Well, when it comes to Russia, Putin and the Ukraine peace deal, the world's wrongest man, in the spirit of a stopped clock, has finally got something right. More on that and Phillips O'Brien on the so-called peace deal after this.
Weekdays from 7 a.m.
Why is there delay?
Straight to the point.
This government is unravelling everywhere you look.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
How can that make sense to anyone?
Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app. Download it now from your app store. LBC.
A message from TfL.
I saw Alicia's photo in my newsfeed. All I can think of is her family. How they're getting on, if they're getting on. I didn't look when I pulled out, and she never made it home. Sounds crazy, but it felt like her motorbike came out of nowhere. But I know the truth. I didn't look again.
Drivers, take another look, not a life. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters.
Chase is the digital bank you can count on.
How so?
Because you get 1% cash back on your grocery shop.
Like on
prosciutto?
Yeah, prosciutto.
And seaweed crackers?
Sure, those two.
Hang on, what about rotisserie chickens?
If it's in your grocery shop, Chase has got your cash back. Join today and get 1% cash back on debit card spending on groceries, fuel and everyday transport. Chase, see what your money can do. 18 plus UK residents eligibility applies. 1% cash back for your first year. Maximum £15 per month. Exceptions apply.
Hurry! Extra savings in Hillary's best ever Black Friday sale end soon. Until the 2nd of December, get an extra 10% off absolutely everything. That's on top of up to 50% off hundreds of made to measure blinds, curtains and shutters. Plus, control your blinds from anywhere with a half-price smart hub when you buy any electric blind. Don't forget, with Hillary's, measuring and fitting is always included. So get window wise and book your free in-home appointment today at hillarys.co.uk. Conditions apply.
In her framing shop, Sally's got an eye for precision, plus a computer full of customer orders and precious memories. There are locks on the doors and sensors on the windows. But what's securing it all is BT Cybersecurity, with business antivirus, cloud protection, and security awareness training. It helps stop threats before they strike, keeping sensitive business data safe. Because protecting your business takes more than just toughened glass and a steady hand. Cybersecurity is everyone's business. Search BT Business Cybersecurity.
Buying a home on a holiday park was the retreat you always wanted. But then came unexpected site fee increases. And that was before the dramatic loss in value. If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, you may have been missold. HolidayParkAdviceCentre.co.uk could help you receive thousands in compensation. Text ASSIST to 78900. That's ASSIST to 78900.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC with James O'Brien. Text 84850.
It is 11:49 and you are listening to James O'Brien on LBC, where I think we'll get one little bit of business out of the way. The world's wrongest man has been right about something, which is, I think, a moment for celebration. I speak, of course, of Daniel Hannan. By dint of being wrong about everything, I don't need to add that he was put in the House of Lords by Boris Johnson, because, again, that goes with the territory. But he has written an article recently under the headline, Trump is behaving precisely as he would if he were a Russian asset. Which the only required response to is probably Homer Simpson going, "Doh." Honestly, I mean, there's so much wrong with this. What? No kidding, Daniel Hannan, who not long ago was, I think, attacking people for attacking Trump. And no wonder he deletes so many of his tweets. Removing the evidence, as it would be called in criminal context. But there it is. Daniel Hannan. Trump is behaving precisely as he would if he were a Russian asset. Trump has always behaved precisely as he would if he were a Russian asset, but those of us who have been pointing it out since Trump became president the first time round have routinely been accused of suffering from Trump derangement syndrome, or being biased, or engaging in liberal elitism. If you're telling the truth, eventually you will be proved right. Sadly, at the moment, that seems to involve welcoming Daniel Hannan into the realms of rectitude, albeit somewhat belatedly. 11:51 is the time. The reason why we've been so uniformly accurate in our depictions of Trump, and particularly with regards to Russia, is because of the quality of the contributors that we get on the programme, either because you've rung in or because we've rung you and asked you to appear. And Phillips O'Brien is in the latter category, the Professor of Strategic Studies at the University of St Andrews. It's 11:51, Phil. And there's usually a news bulletin at 12 noon. So if I asked you to talk us through this so-called peace deal from the get-go, would you be able to do it in the time available if I asked you to imagine you were addressing somebody who knew absolutely nothing about it?
I'll give it my best shot. How about that, James?
Take it away.
Well, basically, this was a deal that was cooked up by people very close to Trump. So a combination, it looks like, his son-in-law, his business partner, Steve Witkoff, his vice president, J.D. Vance, who's very supportive and I think very important in this whole process. So three people who were very close to Trump in direct negotiations with the Russians put together what could only be called a Russian wish list. What do you want, Vladimir Putin, for you to have a deal? And I don't even like to use the phrase peace deal, sure, because I don't believe it is peace. But it basically is a Russian deal to be imposed on Ukraine by the U.S. government, worked out between senior Russians and people very close to Trump.
Hang on a minute. Hang on a minute. There's someone missing from that. I can't quite put my finger on who it who might we have expected to be in attendance at this negotiation about what happens between Russia and Ukraine.
There was not a single Ukraine. Well, the U.S. government claims there was Ukrainian input.
Ah.
But they were not in the room when I think the key players sat down and agreed the position. And, the Ukrainians were blindsided by this deal when it came out because it's a truly terrible deal for them. It is not an even-handed deal. Ukraine gets nothing from what it can be. They get their sovereignty limited. They get no security guarantees of any value. Russia gets the land it conquered plus more. Russia, even crucially, I don't think people are talking about this enough, gets legal recognition of the land it seized. In other words, Europe that we know ends. The post-1945 Europe is over, and we are back now to conquest and the seizing of territory that legally gets transferred and the seizing of people. So millions of Ukrainians get transferred from a democracy to a dictatorship through this deal.
And this is
plus, by the way, the Russians get all amnesty.
Literally, what would you need for us to back a ceasefire? And this is what Russia has put together, in which the men that you mentioned at the outset have sort of greenlit and just ticked. We're in a bit now where Marco Rubio is saying that there was American involvement in the
document.
No, but then there's the bit that we'll move through quite quickly when he said there wasn't.
Yeah, well, basically, my own view on this, and of course, this is speculation, is that what happened is this was Vance, who was Vance is very powerful in this. Vance and Rubio are fighting for the Republican nomination in 2028. So this was Rubio distancing himself from Vance's, what is seen as more as Vance's move, or trying to say it wasn't me. So this is a lot of that is internal politics, but then he got slapped down very hard.
Then he had to undistance himself from it.
Yeah, he got slapped down for that. I mean, and then he was forced to come out and say, yes, I was involved and the Ukrainians were involved. But I think what that was is Republican politics. I mean, the idea that there's some desperate hope that Rubio will be pro-Ukrainian, as if Rubio will show backbone. Mm. The one thing we have seen from Rubio is that he will do what Trump wants. He was violently anti-Trump in 2016, said Trump would destroy the Republican Party, and now he is one of Trump's, most loyal servants. So the idea that Rubio is going to stand up and be helpful is, I think, reaching a bit. But I think what people missed is the domestic political
that's really interesting.
Imperatives that are going on here. They are the number one and two contenders for the nomination in 2028.
That's a touch of Occam's razor there, but you're right. A lot of people have missed it. What they haven't missed, and the reason I mentioned people who ring into the program, as well as people kind enough to grace us with their expertise like you, was a Slovakian lady who talked to us at the very outset of this about the 1938 Munich deal, about the about us but without us paradigm that people in that part of the world are very, very familiar with. And that is exactly where we are again, isn't it?
Well, it's worse.
Go on.
It's worse. In Munich, actually, Chamberlain thought he was doing an honorable deal. I mean, it wasn't an honorable deal, but he thought he was doing a reasonable deal. Thought he was protecting the Czechs. Thought he was really delaying war. Thought he was doing the right thing. The Trump administration is trying to help Vladimir Putin. Chamberlain was not in his own mind helping Adolf Hitler.
Got it.
And so this is it's actually very different in how they approached it. The U.S. government is basically acting as a lobbying agency for the Russian government in this.
Which leads us to the question that we have addressed many times yet gets bigger every time we ask it. Where is Ukraine if Donald Trump does sort of pull the plug completely or does use this as some sort of excuse to do what Putin also wants him to do? The second best case scenario from Putin's point of view would be the American abandonment.
Well, it's a great question. I mean, one thing, by the way, the U.S. has almost already pulled the plug as well.
Yes, of course.
So we have to be, you know, it's not like Trump has been aiding Ukraine with lots of support. He has given a tiny amount of, sold at a high markup, a very small amount of military equipment through Europe. I mean, it would be 1% of what the Biden administration sent. So he's not providing Ukraine with a great deal of aid as it is. I think if he pulled the plug, I mean, what he gave was not irrelevant, but it wasn't that important. This comes down, as it always has for the last year, to what Europe does. This is now Ukraine is a European problem. And it's a European issue that has to be settled. And so it will come down to what European states wish to do on their own behalf.
And what do you think that will be?
I don't know. I think they're torn.
Yeah.
I mean, I think there's some who would like to back Ukraine to the hilt. Usually those close to Russia, you know, the Baltics, the Nordics, maybe Poland, Romania, they see this as existential. I think as you move farther away, there are those who would be more likely to force a deal on Ukraine that Ukraine doesn't want, but just to try and get a temporary respite from where things are. So,
final question. Does it surprise you that much of the coverage still doesn't recognise what has been obvious for some time? That line, I mean, even Daniel Hannan now saying that Trump is acting exactly as a Kremlin agent would or as a Russian patsy would. When it first appeared, possibly because it was in the shadow of the Israeli-Gaza scenario, but it was talked about as if this was being proposed by rational, sensible, honest people across much of our media.
James, one thing that still confuses me is why people make excuses for Trump all the time.
Yeah.
We have had for years people, I mean, we just saw it in the last 2 months perfectly. Supposedly Trump was going to do the right thing for Ukraine. He was active. He was positive. He was putting sanctions on Russia. So when he does things that people supposedly like, even when they're not existent, by the way, the oil sanctions we now know were a fraud because no secondary sanctions came on last week. Then he's positive. But then when he does something bad, oh, it's not his responsibility. It was Witkoff freelancing. But we have built into our reporting a really worrying trend of trying to justify Trump, to present Trump in the best light. And my own view is we're going to make excuses for Trump until we have our own destruction. That we are just trying to say it's not so bad, it's not so bad, he's not so bad. When something he does is terrible, he's not responsible. When something that he does that is good, which he really doesn't do, we praise him to the skies. But in
it also struck me that the I think it's just from to be generous, it's motivated partly by fear of reality, isn't it? It's like they don't really want to acknowledge that we've got somebody who, for whatever reason, is doing whatever Vladimir Putin wants him to do in the White House. Something that struck me on that very theme this weekend was time. So because we're addicted to the 24-hour news cycle and Trump is very much a creation of the 24-hour news cycle, we lose sight of the fact that if you were Vladimir Putin, you don't really care about the 24-hour news cycle. You know you're going to get what you want eventually, and you don't care about how many Russians die. You certainly don't care about how many Ukrainians die. Donald Trump is going to do what you want if you're Vladimir Putin, and you don't really matter. It doesn't matter to you whether it happens tomorrow or next year. And that's our problem with news coverage here, is that we're addicted to the 24-hour cycle, and you can't print the same story every day, which is, this doesn't matter, this doesn't matter, this doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. Eventually, Trump will do whatever Putin wants. But you know that, and I know that, and everybody paying attention knows that.
For the past 5 months, we've had a pantomime go on, where nothing changed. Basically, Trump was protecting Putin and letting Putin get along with his war. That's what Trump's been doing. But we had all this, is he changing? Is he not changing? Is he backing Ukraine? Is he backing Russia? But it was all just the same. It was simply giving Putin time to do. There are no real sanctions on Russia. You know, all that just never happened. That there's been protection, but people don't want to face the big story of what is going on here, because maybe for reasons of drama, as you said, of time, of interest, we must pretend that there is something that might happen that it isn't going to happen to present drama, but it's just crazy.
Speaking of Groundhog Day, a message from Stu, which pops up from somebody, not always from him, every time you appear on the programme. Finally, an O'Brien who knows what he's talking about. Thank you very much, Phillips O'Brien, Professor of Strategic Studies at the University of St Andrews. And just a closing word from me before we head to the news, and then we'll be back with something different to talk about afterwards. If, I suppose, to be kind to people who use the phrase Trump derangement syndrome, if you fear in your guts that you're part of the problem, If you kind of begin to recognise that Trump is all the things his critics have already called him, and the Ukraine issue is probably one of the biggest ever examples of that going. He is, of course, as even Daniel Hannan has now realised, acting exactly as an agent of the Kremlin would act. He always has. But if you'd persuaded your readers or your listeners to vote for Brexit, that Boris Johnson was a brilliant bloke, that austerity was necessary, that Liz Truss was a genius, and now you're having that same creeping fear crawling through your guts again, what are you going to do? You're going to attack the people who make you look bad. So anyone using the phrase Trump derangement syndrome is probably just waking up to the fact that they've helped cause this situation. And this situation, as Phillips has just explained, is worse than what Neville Chamberlain did in 1938. It's 12:03.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom, the head of the CBI trade body has urged the Chancellor not to inflict death by a thousand taxes in her budget on Wednesday. The Confederation of British Industry has warned of a stop-start economy if firms are targeted again. It's understood the budget watchdog will also downgrade growth every year for the remainder of this parliament. Speaking to LBC, the business secretary Peter Kyle refused to confirm or deny those reports.
We have to see what happens at the budget, but we were the fastest growing economy for the first 6 months of this year. The IMF has said that we are likely to be the second fastest growing economy in the G7 for the whole year. This is a government that's determined to continue that trend, but to build on it. We know that we need to take more action in order to get more growth into the economy.
Russia says it's yet to receive an official update following Ukraine peace talks in Geneva. US and Ukrainian officials are resuming discussions today after describing weekend talks as meaningful progress. Exclusive data shared with LBC shows nearly 250,000 children in England are leaving primary school overweight or obese. Analysis shows young people from the most deprived parts of society are more likely to fall into those categories. The government says it is restricting junk food adverts and stopping fast food shops opening close to schools. Several homes have been evacuated after a car crashed into a gas substation in West Sussex. A 100-metre cordon has been put in place after it happened in Pagham in the early hours of this morning. People are being asked to avoid the area. And charities have praised David Cameron for going public with his prostate cancer diagnosis. The former Prime Minister has revealed he's since been given the all clear following treatment. He's now joining calls for a targeted screening programme, something being campaigned for by the entrepreneur Nick Jones. He wants more men to be tested after being diagnosed himself.
Obviously delighted for David. I think it's a shame that it takes a radio programme to get someone screened. And who goes and self-checks? Who wants to go to the doctor and say, can you check for this? You usually go to the doctor when you have a pain.
In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 7 at 95.47. The pound buys $1.30 and €1.13. LBC weather, cloudy with sunny spells for most this afternoon. Some outbreaks of rain in the northeast of England. A milder day, a high of 11 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
How's the business going?
We're busier than ever, but struggling to get the staff we need.
Oh, recruiting can be such a distraction. We gave Job Centre Plus a try, and they've really helped us out.
Really?
Yeah, it was dead easy. We got our own employer advisor, Julie, who helped advertise our jobs, shortlisted candidates for us, and let us interview at the Job Centre. We've hired some great people, and Job Centre Plus really took the hassle out of it, and there was no fee.
Brilliant. That's straight on my to-do list.
Find out more at business.gov.uk/recruit. Eligibility criteria apply.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
Six minutes after 12 is the time. It is, you know, in the interests of getting things right as opposed to waiting until somebody else does, and then sort of running in front of them and pretending that you've been leading them all along. I did come across the most perfect explanation of what has happened on Twitter, something that we've talked about quite a lot on this programme recently, but I have never come close to encapsulating it as beautifully as this chap has. His name is Max Berger. He is the co-founder of the Momentum Training Institute. And this is just on the money. Listen to this. If I'm understanding this correctly, this followed news that they put a little thing on Twitter that allows you to see where an account is coming from, where it's registered, where the person operating it is based, and it became clear immediately that huge numbers of heavily pro-Trump accounts are coming out of places like Nigeria and the Philippines and poor parts of the world. And the reason for that is, well, you've got bots, of course, and whoever is being paid to run bots is, going to be going wherever labour is cheapest. But if you've got actual individuals doing it, then it will be because they have spotted that you can make a few bucks from doing the stuff I first started talking to you about 2 years ago. Before I actually left the platform, I started telling you that I couldn't believe how many accounts were dedicated to sharing footage of people of colour committing crimes or acts of violence, as if it were an exclusively ethnic minority problem, as if white people were never violent or never committed crimes, or never, of course, in the case of one of Nigel Farage's parliamentary colleagues after the last election, never beat up their ex-girlfriend so badly that they got sent down for it. But that really, really struck me. You'll remember me noting it and saying, why is that happening? And then, of course, Musk comes along and commoditizes it. So the more popular the footage you're sharing is, the more money you'll make. But the kind of money on the table might not make that much difference to the average Westerner. But if you were based in a much poorer country, you get the same amount of money. There's no kind of relativism. There's no economic relativism here. The way Musk has set things up is that if you're in a really poor part of the world and you're promoting a MAGA account or being very racist, providing fake videos of minorities doing crime, then the kind of money you make can be much more significant than it would be if you were in the West, if you were in the UK or the US. And that is partly why so many of these accounts turn out to be coming from Africa and Asia. Again, shocked but not surprised. It makes perfect sense if you look at things. But this quote from Max Berger is beautiful in its accuracy. He wrote, "If I'm understanding this correctly, X is owned by a white nationalist who pays poor people of colour in developing countries to pretend to be working-class white Americans to scare other white Americans into being afraid poor people of colour from developing countries are going to ruin America." And, of course, the British equivalent of that is under your nose every minute of every day. Not just, sadly, on social media, but also, of course, in the comment sections of national newspapers and other media organisations, including sometimes our own. But there it is. That's such a beautiful distillation. You know how much I love Rosetta Stones or skeleton keys, things that unlock complicated issues so perfectly that you can get it into a single sentence. If I'm understanding this correctly, X is owned by a white nationalist who pays poor people of colour in developing countries to pretend to be working-class white Americans to scare other white Americans into being afraid of poor people of colour from developing countries and to be afraid that they are going to ruin America. Just a little bit of insight for you there. And the other bit of research that I loved was about what people think of the flags. Remind me to share that with you before I go home. YouGov this weekend publishing polling of what people think of the tatty flags that have been cable-tied to a lamppost near you, despite nobody on your street asking for them. That's an extraordinary statistic that fits entirely with our feelings and findings, but again, flies completely in the face with what the rest of the UK media has been doing. But I want to talk next about something that has been in the news all day and which puts us in the perfectly comfortable position of giving some kudos to David Cameron, who has elected to use his platform. Whether he should have a platform or not is a question for the ages. Another man who gets an entire chapter in How They Broke Britain. It's extraordinary how things have come back round again this week to make that book that I published, I think, 2 years ago. Yeah, 2 years ago. Still relevant and resonant today. Dominic Cummings in the news last week. Boris Johnson in the news last week. They both get chapters. Nigel Farage in the news all the time today because some extremely anti-Semitic adjacent comments that he has made several times over the years are back under the spotlight. You can find them all in the Nigel Farage chapter in How They Broke Britain. And David Cameron gets a chapter, but he's not in the news for negative reasons. He's in the news for positive reasons, or at least for bringing positivity to a very difficult situation by revealing that he went for a prostate check at his wife's behest, and it turned out he did have prostate cancer. And had he not gone for that check when he did, Gabby Logan's very strong on this as well, because her husband Kenny had absolutely no symptoms. They caught it really just through luck and chance, and the horrible thing about this condition, about this cancer, is that it has no symptoms. So Nick Jones, the Soho House dude you just heard in the news, saying you only ever really go to the doctor when you've got symptoms or when you're in pain. And a lot of the time, the prostate stuff will not register. You won't find yourself in any pain. I'm booking a test directly as a consequence of David Cameron. He's a little bit older than me. I've got no symptoms, but Mrs. O'Brien was at the GP's today, and she was not allowed to make an appointment on my behalf. For reasons, I suppose. So I'll be making one myself at the very first opportunity. And that is as a consequence of David Cameron being in the news today. I didn't do it when I interviewed Gabby, for full disclosure. I should have done. I'm 53, very much the catchment area. Don't get around to things because. And that's going to be the topic that we discuss shortly. Why don't men, particularly men, get around to these things? Even when they've got symptoms. But somehow, for some reason, the David Cameron intervention has proved crucial for me. That will be the difference between the decision to do it and the traditional decision to just kick the can down the road a bit and think, well, I'm fine. I have got a thing that you, forgive me for this if you've just tuned in, I've got a thing that you wee on. And that is supposed to give you an indication of whether or not you should go to the doctors. And I've been using that because of my age. And vulnerability, as it were, because of my age. And that, so obviously that's been fine. But it just occurred to me, reading this account and looking at what the relevant charities and healthcare professionals have done as a consequence of David Cameron's intervention, it just occurred to me that, you know, better safe than sorry. Belt and braces. And a proper check, a proper examination is the order of the day. What on earth do you think might tie this topic, prostate cancer specifically, but men not going to the doctors more generally? What on earth do you think might tie it to the last topic about obesity, obese children? It's pretty clear, actually, when I tell you. The link is clear when it's shown to you. It's not immediately obvious if you don't know. Quite difficult to work out, maybe, but it's huge and identical in many ways. And I wonder how many of the more thoughtful answers to the question of why obese children from a poorer background, children from a poorer background are twice as likely to be obese as children from a wealthier background. I wonder how many of the more thoughtful and kind answers to that question would also answer the question that this research throws up. Working class men with prostate cancer are being left behind by the NHS. New data suggests deaths from the disease have fallen across England since 2016. However, improvements in wealthy areas are far outpacing those in more deprived parts of the country. It's another argument in favour of screening for all, so that checks are proactively offered to all men at greatest risks. You can ask your GP for a PSA test, and you can get your results on the NHS app. But the simple reluctance of men from a working class background dwarfs the reluctance of men from a middle class background. Because I think it is a bit too similar to the last hour to focus too heavily upon that class distinction. And there will be links to access to GP. Poorer areas are going to be more poorly served by GPs. That's a generalisation, but not an invention. I'm just interested in men. And oddly, I mean, what is the opposite of this? If you're black, by the way, and you don't know this already, you're twice as likely to develop and die from prostate cancer in a completely separate piece of research, and you're also more likely to live in deprived areas. So it's a kind of double hit for black men on this one, because you're likely to be, I think there's a disproportionate, or there's an ethnic bent in the likelihood, and also there's an ethnic bent in the likelihood of living in a deprived area. So you're kind of coming at risk from two angles, greater risk than white men and greater risk from wealthier men. If you're poor and black, you're in the worst possible space here. But the gap between rich and poor areas has widened. So the number of deaths per 100,000 men in the most deprived areas, they're smallish in terms of percentages. You're looking at about 4 percentage points, but that's twice what the gap was when the figures started to be recorded. And a lot of this is behavioural rather than institutional. It's not simply the case that it's easier to get a doctor's appointment. It's more the case that you're more likely to be asking for one. So that's interesting, and the phone lines are open. But what I really want is is to look at the broader reluctance that men have to go to the doctors. It's weird. It's really weird. And I don't know if it is true of all men. I mean, is this true in other countries? Do we know? Again, it's going to be one of those things that needs you to have a foot in more than one society. I think if you forced me to arrive at a position on this, I think I'd say that it's all men. It's not English men or British men, Scotsmen, Welshmen. I think men think there's something weak about going to the doctors. You know? Or, even more simplistically than that, ignorance is bliss. I'd rather not know. But why is that more prevalent with men than women? So the weakness thing is perhaps part of it. So, you know, men obsess about masculinity and strength, and somehow being ill is a sign of weakness. And even perhaps an evolutionary argument about men needing to be perceived as strong in order to maximise the likelihood of them passing on their genes to the next generation. The ladies aren't going to want to lie with a man who is poorly or weak or sickly or ill, whereas the Adonis over there, who hasn't had a day off in 30 years, he is clearly going to be siring a super race of supreme specimens. I'm exaggerating, but I think there's a kernel of truth in it, unless you've got a better answer. Why are men so much less likely to go to the doctors when they have got symptoms? Remember, the prostate story is about people who don't have symptoms, often, usually. But what is it about why? And do you know how I want to do this? Of course you don't, because I haven't told you yet. What's it like to be married to a man who won't go to the doctors? There's several ways you can come in at this. I don't want to confine it to the wives and girlfriends of what will we call ourselves? Doctor reluctant men. So what's it like to be with a man who won't go to the doctors, even though it's obvious to you that he should? 0345 6060 973. Are you a man who won't go to the doctors? Have a little think. I don't think this is an overly ambitious inquiry. Why won't you go to the doctors? Why do you think it is? And then, in some ways, the Holy Grail, as a man who didn't go to the doctors, as a man who didn't want to go to the doctors, give me a call and tell me why you're bloody glad you did, all right? Because that might just help somebody else break whatever the spell is that they're currently languishing under that prevents them going to the doctors, despite the fact that it's obvious to everyone around them that they really, really should. So it's about a man's reluctance to seek medical help. And the way into this is at least threefold. What's it like to be with a man that won't go to the doctors? Why are men so much more likely than women to be doctor reluctant? And what's the story you can tell that will help a man listening to this realise it's time he gave his head a wobble and got down to the GPs? What did you discover in the nick of time that was a consequence, perhaps, of you suffering from this frankly bizarre, irrational, and dangerous condition. 0345 6060 973. So everyone's welcome on this. It doesn't have to just be men, of course, talking about themselves. It can be women talking about their men. Or it can be clever clogs talking about everyone. Or it can be you talking about a lifetime of not wanting to go to the doctors and why you're jolly glad that that time, or this time, you did.
This is LBC. Our pet's in a pickle. We're here when it matters most. For fuss-free pet insurance policies as unique as they are, visit petsinapickle.co.uk.
A Thames Link train is a place where you can just switch off. Where you have the chance to scroll your feeds as you roll past fields. Or simply relax with a podcast, playlist or power nap. Go with your flow and save with advanced tickets at thameslinkrailway.com. Terms apply.
Things are really heating up in the country's smallest house.
Dad! Squealed Mia Mouse.
We could save around £100 by setting the boiler flow temperature to 60 degrees.
And turning radiators down in rooms we don't use,
interrupted Mo.
Yes, Mo.
Turn them down, not off, said Mia.
Plus finding and blocking drafts,
said Mo.
Should save enough to increase our allowance.
A little saves a lot. You could save around £100 a year off your energy bills with three tips at gov.uk/cleanenergy.
Hey, Harry.
Hello, mate.
Got any tips?
Your best bet is to play BetVictor's daily free-to-play guaranteed prize wheel.
What guaranteed prizes does this guaranteed prize wheel guarantee?
The guaranteed prize wheel means you're guaranteed to win prizes, like free bets, free spins, exclusive offers and cash. Guaranteed.
What was it called again?
The guaranteed prize wheel.
Well, I guarantee I'll give it a spin.
And I guarantee you'll win a prize.
Listen to Harry and make your best bet on BetVictor's guaranteed prize wheel. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. Opt in and spin the wheel. Rewards expire 24 hours after claiming. Gambleaware.org.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
Well, I mean, you know me, I always enjoy a friendly put down, but this is a good one, again from Emma, who is on particularly sparkling form today. Evolutionary psychology is bunkum, they write. This in response to my notion that one of the reasons why men don't want to go to the doctors is because we want to appear manly to our women folk to increase the likelihood of some shenanigans, and therefore increase the likelihood of some children. I still quite like it as a theory. Evolutionary psychology is bunkum, they write. This is capitalism. We've lionized neglecting our health in favour of working to death, and we thank our betters for the chance to do it. Does that also encounter why men are so much more likely to suffer from this condition than women? Perhaps it does, actually. Only relatively recently that women have been as likely to go to work as men are. I don't know. Steve's in Selby. Steve, what have you got?
Hi, good morning, James.
Hello, Steve.
Good to talk to you again.
Likewise.
This is not prostate cancer, but I wanted to relate. I've just come back.
Nor is the phone in. I want to make that clear. It's inspired partly by David Cameron's intervention, but I think if we were confining it to prostate cancer, every call would sound the same. I'm more interested in why men are so reluctant to do it. So what happened to you?
Okay, so basically, I've just come back from Sardinia, where I ended up in hospital. And having a heart stent fitted.
Okay.
Now, I would have said I was symptom-free. In reality, I knew there was something wrong. I'd known there was something not severely wrong, but not great about my heart for months, if not years.
Can I ask why? Can I ask what you were ignoring, or what you were both recognising and ignoring at the same time?
Chest pains when I exerted myself.
Okay.
Is basically it, yeah. So
that's a biggie.
I had some chest pains.
Yeah.
I ignored them. Not through any sense of machismo.
What then?
But I think through two things. One, fear.
Oh.
I knew there was something wrong.
I'd rather
I didn't
not know.
Want to know.
Yeah?
Yeah, I didn't want to know. I'd rather, if I ignored it, it would go away. It wouldn't be real.
Yeah.
And the second reason really was, sorry.
Go on.
A bit emotional at the moment.
The second
reason was just too damn busy. I was working.
Yeah.
And I had to work. If I didn't work, I'm self-employed, have been. If I didn't work, my family didn't get any money.
Fair enough. That's a pretty big driver, isn't it? That's a pretty big motivator.
Absolutely. As it happens, I fainted in Sardinia as I was having a coughing fit.
Gosh.
Totally unrelated.
Sure.
I fell, I broke my nose, there was a lot of blood. They sent for an ambulance, can't hold me off to hospital. They did a CT scan because I'd fallen on my head. The doctor also decided to do an ECG.
Right.
And saw something he didn't like. In the end, oh, sorry.
Hey, it's all right. You're among friends. It's important, this, because someone's going to think, oh, crikey, Steve, oh, that's me, that is. I better get myself down the doctor's. That's why you're here. I know it is.
So in the end, they did an angiogram.
Yeah.
And discovered one artery in my heart, the main one, was 98% blocked.
Now, I'm no medic, but that doesn't sound good.
No. What they said was, because I discussed with them, should I have the procedure that was necessary done there, or should I head home back to the UK? And their answer was, you may not make it.
Blimey.
Which is pretty...
Yeah.
It brings you up short.
It certainly does. So you had the procedure.
I had a stent fitted out there. And they tell me that that was the only blockage they could find. And now I'm in recovery. I'm actually out for a walk today.
Take it easy, Steve. I'm glad I haven't done any idiot's corners today. I'm thinking about your blood pressure. I'm keeping it on the down low. Everything's nice and but wow. And that's why you're emotional, because you're thinking about the what ifs, aren't you?
All the time, yes. Yeah. I think, shit. what would have happened if I'd headed back? What could have happened at any day for months?
And you knew, that's the mad thing, that's why this is a topic today, because you knew.
Yeah, I knew there was something wrong.
That can't be right, can it? But oh, dear. Well, look, I mean...
I just didn't want to know, that was the bottom line. I didn't want to know, so I ignored it.
And we don't like bad news. Oddly, we think we're somehow exercising control over our destiny by avoiding what might be bad news, when, as you've reminded us in pretty stark terms, we're doing the absolute opposite. We're surrendering control over our absolute destiny by not seeking out all the information that's available to us.
Absolutely. And they tell me now, purely fortuitously, because I fell, and they found it, and they fixed it, that there's no reason why, assuming I do what they tell me to do, I shouldn't live 25 years more of active life, but barring other things.
Well, so, that focuses the mind, doesn't it?
Yeah. You know, if you have any pains in your chest, my advice, go and see to it, because you don't need to fear it, because they might be able to fix it. They probably can fix it.
Yeah. Yeah, and again, you know, the things that you think you're winning by not going are potentially things that could contribute to the biggest losses of all. Steve, what a lovely call. I'm so glad you're... Well, it's a happy ending, isn't it? There it is. That's wonderful. Thank you, mate. And there is the perfect example of what I was clumsily trying to explain to you by way of a caller inspiring a listener. There will be more than one listener thinking, it won't just be chest pains either. You know, don't you? You know, I mean, even this joke I do, it's not a joke, this thing I do, is relevant to what Steve said. I talk about age, and I say to you, oh, again, you get to a certain age, don't you? And you notice a twinge, you notice a bit of pain somewhere, and you think to yourself, oh, is that one going to be permanent? Like your knee. Is that going to be permanent? Am I always going to have a poorly knee? Sometimes it kicks in, cold weather, stuff like that. Or is this one of the ones that is going to go away again? You know the ones that are different from that, the ones that aren't twinges and muscles and pains. Your heart, chest pains, there's other stuff. Why would I go to the doctors? Because what about good news? You know, I mean, what would you rather have? No news? Good news? Bad news? Or bad news that is actually good news, because they say the bad news is there's something wrong with you. The good news is we can fix it, which is essentially what happened to Steve. Here's Tim Humphrey with your headlines.
The chief executive of the Confederation of British Industry is warning the government against death by a thousand taxes ahead of Wednesday's budget. It's understood the budget watchdog will downgrade growth every year until 2029. A meeting of the so-called Coalition of the Willing will take place tomorrow as talks to end the war in Ukraine continue. A European Commission spokesperson says a lot of work remains. Lord Cameron has joined calls for targeted screening for prostate cancer after revealing he's been treated for the disease. The former Prime Minister said he was persuaded persuaded to get checked by his wife after listening to an interview. LBC weather, showers and longer spells of rain in the east, some sunny spells in the west. Feeling chilly, though, with a high of 10 degrees.
The new LBC app. News your way. This is LBC.
Train to Brighton with the besties. Immaculate vibes, as always. But I bet my ice skating's going to be pure chaos.
Oh, Em, you better hold my hand. Oh, hold on.
No, styled it out. I've got this.
Last one to the other side buys the hot chocolate.
Back on the train. Only fell twice.
Low-key legend.
We have to do this every year.
Download the Southern Railway app to book tickets and save a third off group travel and off-peak journeys. Southern Railway, where every stop is a story.
How's the business going?
We're busier than ever, but struggling to get the staff we need.
Recruiting can be such a distraction. We gave Job Centre Plus a try, and they've really helped us out.
Really?
Yeah, it was dead easy. We got our own employer advisor, Julie, who helped advertise our jobs, shortlisted candidates for us, and let us interview at the Job Centre. We've hired some great people, and Job Centre Plus really took the hassle out of it, and there was no fee.
Brilliant. That's straight on my to-do list.
Find out more at business.gov.uk/recruit. Eligibility criteria apply.
Hurry! Extra savings in Hillary's best ever Black Friday sale end soon. Until the 2nd of December, get an extra 10% off absolutely everything. That's on top of up to 50% off hundreds of made-to-measure blinds, curtains and shutters. Plus, control your blinds from anywhere with a half-price smart hub when you buy any electric blind. Don't forget, with Hillary's, measuring and fitting is always included. So get window wise and book your free in-home appointment today at hillarys.co.uk. Conditions apply.
There's an old Thai saying that roughly translates as, the family who takes the internet on holiday can locate a less crowded beach. Particularly handy, my friend, if it's peak mating season for nippy little crabs. Pack the internet with an eSIM from Aerolo. That's A-I-R-A-L-O.
This is LBC with James O'Brien. Call 0345 6060973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
12.34 is the time. You're quite right. Missing word round. I completely forgot. I told you that I would in my defence, but now I've remembered. Johnson took blank as NHS warned that COVID could overwhelm system. Johnson, Boris in this case, took blank or blanks as NHS warned that COVID could overwhelm system. Yeah, well done. 4 days off. Or, if you prefer, a holiday. Just as we suspected at the time. And, of course, when he was giving evidence under oath to the COVID inquiry, he essentially claimed that he hadn't. He said, there wasn't a long holiday that I took. I was working throughout the period and the tempo did increase. Blah, 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 blah. Official activity logs, however, that have been disclosed now for the period in February 2020, described by the COVID inquiry last month as a, by the COVID inquiry last week as a lost month. The official activity log suggests that Johnson didn't conduct any official government business on the 15th, 16th, 17th and 21st of February. Instead, he appears to have spent his time walking his dog, Dylan, in the grounds of his Grace and Favour apartment, riding a motorbike given to him by his now wife and former mistress, and hosting friends and family for lunches, dinners and overnight stays. Entries in the 14th to the 24th of February logs make no reference to Johnson working on the COVID response, although he said he had discussed the virus on scheduled calls with world leaders. Colour me shocked. Anyway, the missing words, 4 days off. I don't know if that actually constitutes the biggest element of this disclosure. It might be the fact that there's 10 days during which there's no evidence or reference of him working on the COVID response at all, despite the fact that at the time the bodies were piling high in Italy. Back to the question of men and what I've called Dr. Reluctance or Dr. Reluctant, although Laura in Renfrew has pointed that Dr. Reluctant sounds like the worst Marvel hero of all time. And speaking of using my inbox for whimsy rather than applications to Idiot's Corner, I have to say that I don't know why I loved this one so much, and Pat won't ever know that I read it out. Well, maybe Pat will know that I read it out because there'll be some catch-up. But here's a lovely message, the loveliest message of the day. Hi, James. Missing the show this week as I'm in Tenerife soaking up the sun. I'll catch up next week. Big hugs, Pat. Thanks, Pat. That's so nice. Thanks for keeping me in the loop, Pat. That's lovely, isn't it? More people should send me messages when they're on holiday to tell me that they're not listening to the show. You can use the LBC app, of course, to listen to the show when you are on holiday. But if you're not, nice to keep me informed. It's good to know you're okay. And speaking of being okay, as if proof were needed, Steve has been in touch to say, Marvin, I beg your pardon, has been in touch to say, I'm 38, I've had pains in my chest since last year. I've completely ignored them. Steve was just the push I needed. I'm off to the doctors. Emma writes, my Romanian carer says it's exactly the same in Romania, James. She just said that all men are the same. Carol is not a man. At least I don't think it is. They are. She is. But she is in Stoke Golding. Carol, what made you pick up the phone?
Good morning, James.
Hello, Carol.
No, I'm not a man. And I have been married to one for nearly 50 years. Yeah. And he drives me nuts when it comes to trying to get him to the doctor.
Oh,
because
no.
He won't go.
So he'll tell you that he's not feeling right, but then he won't do anything about it.
No, he doesn't. I have to spot that there's something wrong. It's like looking after a dog. You know when you watch your dog and you know...
It's walking a bit funny.
You know there's something wrong with your dog and you try and work it out because they look different,
yes.
They sound different, they behave differently.
Of course.
Well, I had years of this with him and he would be hiccuping and belching after a meal and you couldn't speak to him and I'd say, what's wrong? What's going on? Nothing, nothing.
Yeah.
And eventually he said, I've got a hernia. He said, I think that's it. That's what's doing it.
Right.
I said, go to the doctors with your hernia. Get your hernia sorted out. No, no, it's all right. If I lie down and push it back in, it's fine.
Oh, no.
So I had years of this until eventually...
Years?
Yes.
Blimey.
Till eventually my dog was dying and I had to take it on my own to the vets because he didn't feel well. This was on the Friday.
Yeah.
And I thought, that's strange. He doesn't usually leave me to deal with this on my own.
Sure.
And I came back very upset, as you might imagine.
Of course.
Realised he was still ill, sent him to bed. Saturday, I said, you're not well. What's going on? Oh, it's my hernia. I said, right, let's go to A&E. No, I'll go tomorrow.
Oh. admittedly, I haven't been married to him for nearly 50 years, but I'm feeling quite sorry for him at this stage.
Well, you feel sorry for him?
I know you didn't. You've been married to him for nearly 50 years, and you've been dealing with the hernia for 5 of them, but, I mean, he's clearly got some sort of psychological block from...
Absolutely enraged,
yes,
because
I
had to take him at, it was 8 o'clock on the Saturday night. I said, that's it, get in the car, I'm taking you to A&E.
Yes.
And guess what? All the drunks were in there with their
Saturday night.
Saturday night,
yeah,
whatever.
Of course, worst possible time to go.
Oh. And he sat there and blow me down, he started feeling really bad. So I timed it well.
Yeah.
And the nurse very kindly brought him something to be sick in.
Oh,
and he was vomiting the contents
okay.
of his stomach.
Well, that's a relief. And I mean, what was it? Well, it was his hernia, was it? And it
yes.
just reached critical mass, as it were.
Enormous. I had never seen it. He'd never shown it to me when it was protruding.
Okay, just for the benefit of anyone tuning in, we're talking about his hernia. After 50 years of marriage, that would have been quite an achievement, Carol.
When the doctor finally saw him, he was an absolute delight. He was so sweet. And he said, yes. He said, that is rather large. He said, I think we'll have to operate.
Oh,
and
God, straight away.
This is on at a weekend, you know, they're not geared up for that.
What? I've got another Carol waiting. You can tell Christmas is around the corner. So briefly, what? Why? I mean, if we were to be generous, and I know that's hard after nearly 50 years of marriage and having to go to A&E when you are...
He's a morning. Very quiet man. He's
quiet there you
man.
Go.
He doesn't want to create a fuss. He doesn't want to be any trouble. And like your last caller said, he's in denial. He just didn't want to know.
Didn't want to know the truth. He kind of did know, but he didn't realise that it was only going to get worse and worse and worse. It was never going to go away.
Yeah.
And it's a general rule of thumb. If you're lying on your back to push it back in again...
Mm-hmm.
Things are not going to improve of their own accord, are they? Is he any different? Do you think he'd be better now?
Oh, well, he had the operation on the Sunday.
Yes.
And the surgeons were fantastic. They did it Sunday morning, so it was obviously...
Blimey.
Severe.
Yeah.
And He's fine now. I didn't let him do anything for 2 months. I was a bully, and he had to be a good boy. But, and he's fine.
But would he be, if it happened again or something, do you think he'd be now more likely to seek a bit of professional help than he was before?
He wouldn't have any choice.
Yeah, I get that impression, actually, Carol. I do get that impression. Thank you. I'm sorry for the dog as well. I'm sorry for the loss of the dog, which got rather overshadowed by the husband's hernia. But I know that once you got back from the hospital, there had been a big hole in the house, a big hole in the home. Thank you. Although it does sound like, while your husband was recuperating, he fulfilled the role of the dog when it comes to obeying orders, Carol. So at least there was a little bit of give and take. Will's in Epsom. Will, what made you pick up the phone?
Hi, James. Good afternoon.
Welcome, mate.
Thank you. It was a couple of things, really. Firstly, I think sometimes the fear of fear itself can be very, very compelling. I've also done a lot of work with people in different forms of you need to get help, so things like debt advice and other things. And we always used to say people in vulnerable positions would often think 5 minutes ahead.
God, yeah, again, we're back to cycles, aren't we, in planning and planting trees for the next generation. You're not going to do that if you're worried about getting your tea on the table tonight, are you?
Exactly, and that's often a thing. And it's not to say that working class vulnerable, that's not fair, but if you are thinking about what do I need to do next, the pain will go away in 20 minutes, and then I worry about what's kind of coming up next. I have to say, in waiting to call, it was really compelling listening to a lot of those stories from other chaps and things. And I do, and I think about, you know, I'm one of those guys. Like, it won't be a it'll be a broken leg that'll get me to go there, but you know in your heart of hearts. And I don't think it's machismo or anything. It's just...
No, I don't know.
I'd rather be worried of what might happen than perhaps going somewhere and thinking, oh, that is going to happen, you know, and the worry about the short term and your care and responsibilities and everything else like that. It's a really difficult space to explain, but I think something that men should be having conversations about, you know.
Because you'll make everything worse, even if there's a logic, especially if you're self-employed, there's a logic to thinking, I can't go to the doctors, I can't afford it. This is one. I'm not going to say any names. He hasn't asked me not to, but my career drives me away from going anywhere near a doctor, James. Any diagnosed issue will have my medical license suspended. I'm an airline pilot, very likely with irritable bowel syndrome or Crohn's disease, so there's obviously something very wrong with his tummy. But he don't go to the doctors because they take away his license to fly. So there's a logic to that, but what would you rather be, a pilot who can't fly or a dead former pilot? You know, I don't want to be too brutal about it, but that's the equation that you're ultimately contemplating here.
Yeah, it's a really good point. And if you don't know, it's sort of better to sort of have that in the background of, well, maybe or maybe not, rather than confronting that really difficult reality in front of you, you know?
It's a bit like having a lottery ticket before they've read the numbers out. Because it's about the possibility still being alive. I go to the doctors and any hope that it's not a big deal is gone. So I'm not going to go to the doctors because I quite like the hope that it's not a big deal. Even as, and Steve told this story brilliantly up in Selby, even as you know somewhere inside you, this is not good. But the possibility that it might not be bad is a possibility that gets removed by a visit to the doctors. Not necessarily, of course. The doctor could tell you you've got nothing to worry about. I had a pain in my back until relatively recently, and I thought that it was because I carried my wallet in my pocket. So I stopped carrying my wallet in my pocket and it went away. But it came back after a couple of days. And then I realised, this is very boring. I'm fully aware of that. I thought I might have a hernia, oddly. But I realised that the way we've got the sitting room set up, I was watching the television side on. So I'm constantly twisting on the sofa to watch the television. And that was it. So I've just moved. And now my back doesn't hurt anymore. So is that, you could go to the doctors thinking you got a hernia and find out you've just got a wallet in your pocket that set your posture off. Or anyway, it's never worse to know. Because even if it's not good news, it's better to know. Because you can then deal with the fact that there's something bad on the horizon or that there's an operation coming up or worse. But to not know, it just robs everybody in your life of the opportunity to prepare or to accustom themselves. It's a weird one, but it is a much bigger male thing than female thing. But yeah, I think the machismo argument might be a bit of a red herring. I said there was another Carol on the way. I wasn't fibbing. And then I made a Christmas-related joke that I stole off Keith. Carol Cadwallader, it struck me that when we spoke to her about Russian interference in UK politics. She was keen to get the case being brought by former MPs back into the public space. Caroline Lucas, Ben Bradshaw, Alan Smith lodging their case with the Grand Chamber of the European Court of Human Rights. So after Nigel Farage's very close friend, colleague, I think Farage was clearly a mentor to Nathan Gill, got sent down on Friday for taking bribes from Russian cronies in return for parroting Russian propaganda in the European Parliament and elsewhere. To be clear, there is absolutely no suggestion that just because you have parroted Russian propaganda on GB News or in various newspaper columns or in the European Parliament, absolutely no proof whatsoever or indeed any reason to believe that everybody who parrots Russian propaganda on a regular basis is in receipt of bribes from a Kremlin stooge. Just because this one was, doesn't mean that all the other members of the same political party that have parroted Russian propaganda as if it were going out of fashion have taken any bribes. But when that story dropped, it occurred to me that it's yet more proof that investigations into Russian interference in UK politics are way overdue. So I thought we'd catch up with Carol Cadwallader. And we will do after this.
Coming up at 1 on LBC, Sheila Fogarty.
Cheaper energy bills and a million lifted out of poverty. Can it be done? Plus, David Cancer reveals his prostate cancer to mobilise men on their health. Come on, lads.
Sheila Fogarty at 1. Listen on our free Global Player app or our new LBC app.
Things are really heating up in the country's smallest house.
Dad! Squealed Mia Mouse.
We could save around £100 by setting the boiler flow temperature to 60 degrees.
And turning radiators down in rooms we don't use.
Interrupted Mo.
Yes, Mo.
Turn them down, not off, said Mia.
Plus finding and blocking drafts,
said Mo.
Should save enough to increase our allowance.
A little saves a lot. You could save around £100 a year off your energy bills with 3 tips at gov.uk/cleanenergy.
Have you ever felt like your investment advisor is giving you an off-the-shelf retirement plan? That they just want to put you in a box? But who wants that? At Fisher Investments UK, we never put you in a box. We create a plan that's just right for you, because it's only right for us if it's right for you. Fisher Investments UK. Retirement advice that's as individual as you are. Learn more at fisherinvestments.co.uk. Investing involves the risk of loss. Fisher Investments UK is regulated by the UK Financial Conduct Authority.
At Laithwaite, we go to great lengths to bring you great wine. We go far and wide. Searching high, and we mean really high, and low, and we mean stored deep underground in a cave low. Off the shelf, we don't go there. Off the beaten track, we certainly go there. And the best bit is, we even come to you. Order now at laithwaites.co.uk. Laithwaites. We stop at nothing to bring you great wine.
Join Andre Rieu at OVO Arena, Wembley, London, on 18th of September. Book now at andrerieu.com.
At Morrisons, we're making a big deal out of our big deals this Black Friday. From electronics to toys to kitchen appliances and beauty products, you can save on big brands like KitchenAid, Lego, Bosch, Bayliss and Harding and Toshiba, all with your More card. Hurry, when it's gone, it's gone.
Morrisons, to shop at Morrisons.
Majority of stores online varies, excludes Morrisons Daily More card at required 18 plus.
The congestion charge helps to reduce traffic in central London. To ensure it remains effective while incentivising the switch to electric vehicles, from the 2nd of January, electric cars will be charged a 25% discounted rate of £13.50 rather than the new daily charge of £18. To receive the discount, electric cars must be registered on AutoPay. Further discounts are available for other electric vehicles. Search TfL AutoPay. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters.
Leading Britain's conversation, LBC, with James O'Brien.
12:50 is the time. I stress again that just because somebody routinely parrots Kremlin propaganda in various spaces, whether media or political, does not mean that they are taking bribes from a Kremlin stooge like Nigel Farage's close friend, former colleague and indeed party leader in Wales, Nathan Gill, was sent to prison for doing on Friday. I was, however, somewhat surprised to hear Keir Starmer calling for an investigation that's clearly long overdue. I was very surprised to hear who he was calling upon to conduct an investigation. I've had a bit of trouble with the clips lately. I don't know why. So hopefully this is the correct clip of Keir Starmer talking about an investigation into Russian interference in UK politics as a consequence of Nigel Farage's very close friend, former colleague and party leader in Wales being found to have taken bribes from a Kremlin stooge in return for parroting Kremlin propaganda.
This EU empire, ever seeking to expand, stated its territorial claim on the Ukraine some years ago. Just to make that worse, of course, some NATO members said they too would like the Ukraine to join NATO. We directly encouraged the uprising in the Ukraine that led to the toppling of the President Yanukovych, and that led, of course, in turn to Vladimir Putin reacting. And the moral of the story is if you poke the Russian bear with a stick, don't be surprised when he reacts.
No, sorry, that wasn't a clip of Keir Starmer calling for an investigation into Russian interference. That was Nigel Farage parroting Kremlin propaganda in the European Parliament. Can we try again, Keith? Come on.
I don't admire Putin. What I said was he'd outwitted and outclassed you all over Syria. I also said I didn't like him as a human being and I wouldn't want to live in Russia.
I'm not asking.
But what
I'm
I want to do, let's not meddle.
Hang on, just before you go on, you did actually say you admired him.
As an operator, not as a human being.
The question was, which current world leader do you most admire? As an operator, I would say Putin.
Yes.
Oh, sorry. Keith, come on, mate. One job, eh? That wasn't the right clip either. That was Nigel Farage parroting Kremlin propaganda and lying about it. Third time lucky, eh?
The ever eastward expansion of NATO and the European Union was giving this man a reason to his Russian people to say they're coming for us again and to go to war.
But you were echoing him.
Sorry?
You were echoing him. That's what Putin says.
No. Sorry, I've been saying this actually since the 1990s. Ever since
yeah,
the fall
of
the wall. But hang on a second. We've provoked this war. Of course it's his fault. He's used what
we've
done
as an excuse. But we provoked the invasion of Ukraine.
Yes, and very interestingly, once again, 10 years ago when I predicted this, by the way, I'm the only person in British politics that predicted what would happen. And of course, everyone said I was a pariah for daring to suggest it. George Robertson, former Labour cabinet minister, who went on to become the Secretary General of NATO, has in the last couple of weeks said the war is a direct result of EU expansion.
Again, wrong clip. That was Nigel Farage parroting the Kremlin line, which is precisely the phrase that Lord Robertson used to describe Farage parroting the Kremlin line after it was brought to his attention that Farage had been lying about him. Right, last chance, Keith.
But in particular, it's a big victory for Nathan Gill, our leader in Wales, an honest, decent, honourable man who's been loyal to me and the party at all times. Nathan, you've led UKIP Wales into this, and well done you.
Sorry. Right. That was a man who has not been found to have taken bribes from the Kremlin in return for parroting Kremlin propaganda in the European Parliament and on various media outlets, talking about a man who has been sent to jail for taking bribes from a Kremlin stooge, just to be absolutely clear. Are we ever going to find the clip of Keir Starmer calling upon a rather unlikely source to conduct an investigation into this obvious scandal?
Nigel Farage, he often has a lot to say. What he needs to do is to launch an investigation into his party, to understand how that happened. This is a serious sentence that's been imposed today, over 10 years. It's a very serious issue. How did that happen, that this was happening in his party? And what other links are there between reform and Russia? And that would be the mark of a leader, and that's what he should do.
Carol Cadwallader is the former investigative journalist at The Guardian and The Observer who has led the line on precisely this subject. She is also now the co-founder of the brand new publication called The Nerve and the co-founder of The Citizens, a tech justice non-profit. Carol, if we were to make a list of the worst possible people to conduct an investigation into potential Russian interference in UK politics, I'm not saying that Nigel Farage would necessarily be the worst imaginable, but he'd be in the top one.
I mean, that was a brilliant montage.
Oh, I wish. It was just Keith pressing all the wrong buttons, Carol. I can only apologise on his behalf.
I have to say, I think Keith did us a valuable service there because it's just so stark, isn't it? Listening to Nigel Farage repeating what are absolutely the Kremlin's lines. And so to have Nigel Farage, the pro-Kremlin mouthpiece, investigate the role and relationship of Russia and Russia propaganda with his own party strikes me as an absolutely absurdist proposition from Keir Starmer. And his language there, it would be the mark of a leader to launch an investigation and to ask those questions. Well, guess what? We have a leader in this country. He's called the Prime Minister. It is Keir Starmer. And the person who has the power to have an investigation into these matters, which we have been pushing for nearly a decade now. I started writing about this in 2016, you know, with the team at The Observer, who are now my co-founders at the new publication, The Nerve. We published article after article. We exposed massive unlawful activity during the referendum. And the connections to Russia were always front and centre of that. The authorities did not do the job that they were supposed to do at the time. The police dropped those investigations. But now, you know, we're coming into a different era. This is a game changer, the conviction of Nathan Gill. And we know that there are multiple other people involved. And we have to have an investigation. We have to have an inquiry. And that's, you know, just to bring you, I think last time I was on here, James, I told you a little bit about this legal case, which the Citizens, the nonprofit I set up, has been part of since 2020. We have, with a group of MPs, been pursuing this inquiry with the British government, and they have steadfastly refused and continue to refuse. Even now, it has now gone to what is the Supreme Court of the European Court of Human Rights. And we're in a position in which the court has ruled that there was foreign interference. There has been foreign interference from Russia in British elections, in British politics. They have said that now. It's in a judgment. They have agreed, and we've established those facts. There is just one thing left, which is now a matter of legal debate over whether the law is such that it can force the British government to have this investigation. But guess what? The law doesn't have to force the British government. The British government could just decide to have it. So why isn't it? That's the question.
It is indeed. You brought us in bang on time as well. I've barely got time to read you a headline from one of Daniel Hannan's latest contributions to Public Gaiety, who writes, Trump is behaving precisely as he would if he were a Russian asset.
Oh, well, thank you, Daniel, at last.
Yes. Carol Cadwallader, at last indeed. Many thanks indeed. I apologise for the curtailed time, but Keith and just those wrong buttons that he kept pressing and playing out all the wrong clips. Honestly, we're going to have some stern words after the show today. That's it from me for another day. You can listen back on Global Player or the new LBC app, where you can stay up to date on the top stories and opinions, put your news categories in the order you want. You can pause and rewind live radio and listen to a range of podcasts, including the James O'Brien Daily, or many of the best bits from my LBC show every day. Download the official LBC app for free from your app store now. Tom Sawbury will be with you at 4, but now on LBC, it's time for Sheila Fogarty.
Thank you very much, James. 3 today. The Chancellor won't call it a mansion tax as such, but is a big levy on homes worth over $2 million. A fair tax, is it even worth it politically? We'll be looking ahead to the budget. The former Prime Minister David Cameron has prompted questions, hasn't he, about men's health? I know you've been talking about it, James. My question is, what stops you? Is it something in your conditioning as a man, or is it something more personal than that to you? Going to start, though, with energy costs. The government announcing it will cut energy costs for over 7,000 businesses by 2027. Feels a bit jammed tomorrow. Labour donor and energy entrepreneur Dale Vince joins me. He has other ideas, he says, would achieve much more. Is Labour the party of business and growth?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 1 o'clock, the chief executive of the CBI is urging Rachel Reeves to forge a tax system that rewards investment, a rate system that encourages growth, and to build the infrastructure we need. In a speech, Rhian Newton-Smith called on the Chancellor to avoid death by a thousand taxes in Wednesday's budget. She was watched by Business Secretary Peter Kyle, who told LBC she had a lot of good things to say about Labour.
She praised us for the regulatory reforms. She praised us for taking action on energy costs. She praised us for taking action on planning.
planning reform. She said all of these things are making a difference to the British economy and the ability for businesses to thrive within it.
Tory leader Kemi Badenoch spoke to delegates, saying companies are looking ahead to the budget with trepidation, but claiming the biggest obstacle to growth was the government's employment rights bill.
Businesses don't oppose rights for workers. You know that good staff are your most valuable asset, but you can see better than anyone in Westminster that this bill is not about fairness. It is about power. It is about putting unions in charge of your workplace and sending you the bill.
A European Commission spokesperson has said there will be a meeting tomorrow of Ukraine's coalition of the willing. Russia says it's yet to receive an official update following peace talks in Geneva. The IOPC says four Northamptonshire police officers should face misconduct proceedings over their handling of abuse allegations reported by a woman before she was found dead in a car boot in East London. 24-year-old Hashira Brella was found in a Vauxhall Corsa in Ilford last November. A murder charge has been authorised against her former husband, who is believed to have travelled to India. Senior figures from the BBC are due to face questions later from Westminster's Culture, Media and Sport Committee. It comes after the dispute over its editorial standards following a Panorama episode featuring an edited clip of President Trump. And charities have praised David Cameron for going public with his prostate cancer diagnosis. The former Prime Minister has revealed he's since been given the all clear following treatment. He's now joining calls for a targeted screening programme. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 21 points at 95.61. The pound buys $1.31 and €1.13. And the LBC weather, showers and longer spells of rain in the east, some sunny spells in the west, feeling chilly with a high of 10 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Tim Humphrey.
Some companies try to reel people in by promising quick cash if you pay them to claim work expenses. But think twice before taking the bait, because they might just want to land a commission. And it turns out you aren't eligible to claim anything. You'll have to pay HMRC back, and it's unlikely the company will refund any fees. So don't get caught out. Check if you're eligible and make a claim with HMRC for free online. Just search Don't Get Caught Out.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Sheila Fogarty.
Hello there, good afternoon to you. Now, we spoke last week, didn't we, about your energy bills, your home energy bills. Looking ahead to the budget, we heard from one businessman, and I know that many more of you are experiencing the same. Your energy costs in your business have spiralled as well. Gentleman we spoke to last Wednesday, his costs had gone in the space of 2 years, I think it was, if I remember correctly, had gone from 2,000 a month to 8,000 a month for his business. Requires a lot of energy, has a dry cleaning and washing and laundering element. But that is a massive dent, isn't it, if your profits are being reduced that significantly. That's just one example. Well, the business secretary, Peter Kyle, has been speaking about this today in front of the CBI. He and other leading politicians have been taking questions at the CBI conference in London and making speeches. And amongst the things that Peter Kyle was saying is a commitment to bring down the energy costs of over 7,000 British businesses, electricity bills specifically. He says they will be slashed by up to 25% alongside increased support on access to finance. But it's energy bills I want to focus on this hour, particularly as it relates to business, but not only as it relates to business. This is what the business secretary, Peter Kyle, said to Nick Ferrari at breakfast on this announcement this morning.
We're going to be consulting on choosing 7,000 businesses so that we can lower their energy costs by 25%. You know, that's going to be a huge discount so that those manufacturing businesses can lower the cost of their production cycle. They can start investing that money, obviously, in their businesses and lowering the costs to consumers, being more competitive on the international stage. You know, this will be a big step forward. This is one of the things that business has been crying out for, and it's one of the areas we can start to act on.
How do you qualify to be within the BICS scheme?
And that's what we're consulting on now. So today we're starting an 8-week period of consultation, and then I'll legislate after that to make sure we get the scheme right. But we're working with business. I mean, there are 150,000 manufacturing companies in this country. You have to be a manufacturer to qualify, but you also have to be aligned with our priorities as a country. We have to choose, I'm afraid. We can't give this discount to everyone. But you know that number one the number one objective of this government is economic growth. So we will be choosing those companies who are growth orientated, for whom the discount can have the biggest impact, because we need to get that growth into the broader economy. So we'll be consulting with businesses as to how we choose it. And of course, this comes on top of the supercharger I announced and spoke to you about a few weeks ago. And it comes on top of the transition that we're making to lower the price of electricity overall into the long term.
Well, it's that element, lowering the price of electricity into the long term, that is a really a sort of hard-fought bit of battleground on all of this. The industry's likely to answer the question Nick put to the business secretary a bit more specifically, the business is likely to benefit from this big scheme in a year and a half's time, so it's not immediate, are things like automotive, aerospace, their supply chains, like chemicals and parts. British industrial electricity prices are currently some of the highest in the G7, making it harder, of course, for British firms to compete on the global stage. And you get the feeling from what the business secretary was saying there, that it will not include the likes of the business owner that I spoke to last Wednesday, and we'll speak to again on Budget Day, whose dry cleaning firm and house cleaning firm has quadrupled. His bills have quadrupled from 2,000 to 8,000 in the space of a couple of years. Well, I'm joined in the studio by a man who says he knows how to do this faster and better and more effectively. Dale Vince, founder of Ecotricity, chairman of Forest Green Rovers FC, and a Labour Party donor, a significant Labour Party donor, to boot. Good afternoon to you.
Hey, Sheila, how are you doing?
Fine, thank you. Yes, now I have, let's put some context into this conversation before we go anywhere else. I have in front of me a small tabloid-sized newspaper, or paper anyway, called Babelfish, in which you talk very specifically about the connection between gas prices and our electricity bills. You say that connection has to be broken, and broken fast.
Yes, is one of the three things that we have in there as proposed energy market reforms. We did some deeper analysis of the impact of energy bills on our economy and found it to be profound in terms of driving up inflation, Bank of England rates, mortgage rates, pay bargaining and cost of
living. And a drag for businesses. Clearly.
Absolutely. So we looked at 2023 in particular, and the link itself added $43 billion to our energy bills. $30 billion of that was to business energy bills. Talk about making them uncompetitive and stuff like that. And it's simply because we allow gas to set the price of all electricity on our system, even when we make it from our own wind and sun. It's a very bizarre system that we have. We've been campaigning for 3 years now to have this link broken. And as I say, it's one of three things in our paper today.
Is this going to be a repeat thing, the Babelfish? It's like a little sort of policy paper in
yes.
a way.
Yes, we have another one coming first quarter next year, where we take a deep dive into the tax system. But this one, three reforms.
That'll be fun.
Yeah, we could halve our energy bills. Not just favour 25% of businesses that use the most power. And by the way, who's going to pay for that? The taxpayer. We, if we have three reforms, we can halve all our energy bills.
And you're not the only person who has said this or seen, and this is bound to include the current